go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Yesterday, that was not hooky. That was just too much family values in one small day. From follow-ups to pre-ops to, yeah. That's the next thing coming. It's been a long struggle, but Margie's going to have her gallbladder out. Another teenage gallbladder that should be just fine that isn't. Because, you know, we live in the land of the friends of coal. Don't you just love coal? Doesn't it just make you all warm and tingly just to think about it? I've got a photograph. Actually, Agnes has a photograph. And I'm going to ask her to send it to News Ninja Susan at some point for putting up on the website. You just got to see this. Oh, my God. Just to get a sense of what it's like to live here in the carbon paradise. It was during the trip to take Margie for her consult for her gallbladder extraction, a cholecystectomy, I do believe, is the appropriate medical term. And Agnes just happened to drive by. A vehicle. It's a Dodge Ram 4x4 Durango, I do believe. No, it's a something TRO. Nitro. It's a Dodge Nitro. And in pink letters on the back glass, sufficient to obscure... sufficient to obscure proper appreciation of traffic behind one, big pink letters on the back glass, coal miner's wife. Coal miner's wife. But then, and here's the fun part. Oh, this is the part you're really going to love because it exists on so many levels. Welcome to the Horn, by the way. I'm Bob Kincaid. Did I forget to mention that? No, I just neglected to. If you're new to the program, this is Conversation Radio. I hope it will be as meaningful for you as it has been for so very many people who tune in from all around the country and all around the world, as a matter of fact. You're welcome to join in the conversation anytime. New callers kick in, new callers call in, nobody faints, nobody... get the smelling salts, Matilda! No, everybody... yeah, it's easy. It's fun and easy. To become involved with the program, and you are welcome to do so. You know, the podcasts are free, the stream is free. We do raise a little funds here just to keep the lights on. And there's a PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com, and there's a snail mail address if you don't like PayPal. One of these days we're going to get the Google checkout the widget up there too for those of you who hate PayPal, and they are, and you are legion. Many of you just despise PayPal, and I don't blame you, but everybody charges about the same amount of money for these transactions. It's about $3 on 100. But I mean, even the non-profit company charges $3 on 100. But anyway, to get back to my story, yeah, across the back glass of this vehicle over in Nicholas County, West Virginia, coal miner's wife. And it's all done up in pink, you know, kind of like Mary Kay. Coal miner's wife. But the beautiful thing was down and to the right of the license plate on the back of this silver Dodge Nitro 4x4. You know the old skull and crossbones, right? the pirate symbol, you know, yar, pirates, yo-ho-ho. Well, there's a sort of a manifestation of that here in West Virginia and Appalachia generally. It's a skull wearing a miner's cap with a light on it over a crossed pick and shovel. Not that they use those anymore. It's all automated. You know, continuous mining machines and stuff like that, electricity. And, right. Now, granted, my grandfather and my great-grandfather hand-loaded coal into cars, and they were hauled out by mules, and the coal company always said, well, you know, the bottom of that's all slate, so we're gonna, you know, we're not going to pay you everything we owe you. That's the kind of dirty bastards that they were. But so it's a... This is not vamping. I was stunned by this thing when I first saw it, and when I get it to News Ninja Susan and she gets it up on the website, you're going to go, ah! So it's this coal mine inversion of the skull and crossbones, and in big bold letters above the skull, it just says coal in all caps, coal. And then underneath it, it says, the real black power. No, really. That's how far the coal cult has gotten in this state. Coal, the real black power. I don't know if coal miners like stand up with their fists in the air like the 1968 Olympics in Mexico City. Coal, the real black power. I wish I could get my buddy Brian Reznor, who does the one of the announces for the program still, a couple of them. I wish I could get him on here. He was talking. He does DJ work because he's an announcer and a DJ, oddly enough. And I was just talking to him the other day because, you know, I worked with him over there at the radio station in the fifth smallest radio market in America years and years ago. And so we've stayed in touch over the years, and he DJs in a club. And we were just talking the other day. And I mean, he plumb lit out on these mountaintop remover types, you know, with their cult of coal business. Oh, I'm not going to even try to tell you what he said, because first of all, we'd have to warn away the children, because there were several select words involved. But, he sees... He sees this cult for what it is, i.e., a cult. It really is. But, you know, you probably didn't tune in to hear me. But I tell you these things just to give you an idea of the world that we live in here and what we're talking about when we talk about the thugs of coal. The real black power. That's funny, ain't it? I don't care who you are. Real black power. You see, there's some nasty little racism that rides with an assertion like that. You know, disempowering. Yeah, never mind. You get the idea. You do, don't you? You do get the idea. That's why I tell you that the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, are the bravest, hardest working people I know. Because they are. Because when you're dealing with people who hold fast to philosophies like coal, the real black power, you're dealing with some that most toxic and dangerous of combinations in the American cultural experience. Dumbass, dirt stupid, and pig-eyed, hateful, mean. And it takes a hell of a lot of courage to stand up to sorry bastards like that. Coal, the real black power. Sheesh. But it's all over the place here. Like I said, I got when I was following Ferg over to the hospital last week, a week ago tomorrow. I've got my flashers on. I'm following the ambulance. We're in the left lane. We're doing 75, 80 miles an hour. And an idiot with a Friends of Coal sticker on his truck decides to pop out between me and the ambulance so he can draft behind the ambulance a little while, just like them boys in NASCAR. Jeebus. That's my world. It really, really is. That's my world. And the minute you see one of those Friends of Coal stickers on an automobile, you know exactly who and what you're dealing with. Dumbass and pig mean. I wish it wasn't so, but it is. So that, you know, just welcome to my world, right? My world and welcome to it. I had an interesting I had an interesting email exchange with Jeanette, who listens to the program. She was put off a little bit, you know, not like, you know, Bob, you and... But I used the word vanity candidates the other night to describe third-party presidential candidates. And I guess Jeanette took a little bit of exception. She said, "Wow, I couldn't disagree with you more. Ralph Nader is anything but... I voted for him in 2000 and 2004 and Obama in 2008. In my opinion, only my vote for Obama was wasted. I'll vote Green, Democratic Socialist, or write in Buffy the Vampire Slayer before I'll vote for another Democrat." Then I understand that. You know, that's absolutely anyone's right. And I'm not trying to be insulting when I say vanity candidate. But what do you call a candidacy that is run with absolutely no hope whatsoever of achieving the purpose of running for office, to wit, winning that office? I thought vanity was rather gentle. But what do you call it? That's not to say that the impulses behind it are bad. I'm not saying that at all. But if you look at the constitutional scheme as it exists, third parties don't have a chance. For God's sakes, Teddy Roosevelt had already been a very popular president of the United States when he ran as a third party in the candidate on the Bull Moose ticket. I'm sure back in 1912, Bull Moose didn't sound nearly as geeky and nerdy as it does now. Probably sounded downright progressive, Bull Moose. Thank God Sarah Palin wasn't around. She'd had her 30, her, what is it, 7mm Magnum out. You know, with the 4.5x14 scope on. Where's that Bull Moose? Here's that Bull Moose around here. And consequently, in attempting to explain my position, I said, "Listen, you know, in 2012, a Democrat or a Republican is going to win the presidency of the United States. If the Democrat wins, it's going to be Barack Obama. If the Republican wins, it's going to be probably, you know, who knows? They're all a bunch of neo-maxi Zoom dweebies. But the one thing we know for sure is that a third-party candidate ain't gonna win." And my argument was that, I think, you know, if you go back and you consider all the, for instance,
2000 and 2004 when the Republican National Committee and various Republican organizations gave money to keep Ralph Nader in the race? Now, why would they do that? Why on earth would they do that? Because they were secretly as progressive as Ralph? No. Come on. Because they knew that Ralph was more liberal than the, well, either Al Gore or John Kerry in 2004, and that Ralph would siphon votes away to their advantage, the Republican advantage. And that's just politics. But the one thing that I pointed out to Jeanette, and I will point out here, is that people who trend to the left of center, as do I, as do many of us in the Horn family, probably hazard a guess and say most of us in the Horn family trend left of center, especially when you consider that the right, the center is just to the right of, you know, Mussolini at this point in time. Most of us trend to the left of center. And most of us are unhappy with the Democratic Party as it exists. It's awfully... I wasn't reassured by Nancy Pelosi's remarks today that, well, we're not going to get rolled again, by God. Oh, we've figured them out now. Yeah, I'm inspired. How about you? No? You either? No, see, no. But we need the energies. We need the energies of committed, compassionate, caring, truly progressive, liberal, whatever word you want to call them, to take it's not about taking our country back. It's not taking the party back. But you know what? If you're on the outside looking in, oh, they're being all green or independent or whatever, then whatever the Democratic Party does, you got no say in. And simply to complain about it is simply to complain, without any possibility of changing any outcomes. And the whole point of all of that is that, the teabaggers are by definition more politically aligned with a third party, to wit, the Libertarian Party. They could merrily vote for a Libertarian presidential candidate till the cows came home. But instead of doing that, the teabaggers, to a certain extent funded from inside the Republican Party, the teabaggers engaged the Republican Party and took it over. I suppose you've heard the news by now that John Boehner and Mitch McConnell say that they will not appoint a single member to the Super Congress. You know, that 12-person extra constitutional piece of crap commission that's supposed to report back and cut the bejesus out of stuff by December. Yeah, John Boehner and chinless Mitch McConnell, Yertle the Turtle, have already made it plain that they will not appoint anyone to their half of the Super Congress that will tolerate so much as a penny in taxation being raised on billionaires. So, guess what happens with that? That means in December, long about Christmas time, you know, when we're already all going to be whooped up into a frothy frenzy over the war on Christmas, we're going to have round three now of the war on Granny. Now, why would they make a statement like that if they were going to go forward and negotiate in good faith? Well, they did it because their party was taken over by people working inside their party who would otherwise have been more likely aligned with a third party itself, the Libertarians, to wit, the teabaggers. Here's a hint. Democrats, especially liberal and progressive Democrats to the left of center and further left of center, could do that too. We could do that too. We could drag the Democratic Party kicking and screaming back to its traditional, historical, and philosophical roots of actually giving a rat's ass about working people, poor people, and you know, just ordinary, decent people. Here's another hint. We ain't gonna. We're not gonna. So in 2012, we'll see somebody run as a third-party candidate for president. And enough noise will be made to get that person probably 3, 4, 5, 6% of the vote, maybe. And I don't think the vote's going to go the way it went in 2008, when President Not Sure, now President Not Sure, then candidate Not Sure, had the luxury of a bit of a cushion. And of course, remember inside all of this, and the unmistakable expert on this is, of course, Brad Friedman. We're going to have elections with video game voting in them. Now, bearing that in mind, what happens if the race gets Bush-Gore tight? I'm not saying this by way of advocating that you not go out and vote for a third party or vote your conscience or whatever, but, yeah, that's how it's going to work. And the overarching theme to everything that I'm saying here is not that, oh, well, you know, I'm a Democrat, I'm always going to be a Democrat. No. I leave all kinds of races blank on my ballot when I go in, just because I can't bear to give the imprimatur of my approval to the kind of candidates I have to deal with here in West Virginia. Joe Manchin versus John Racey for the Senate? No great appreciable difference, except for the fact that maybe Joe is a little less nuts than Racey. Left it blank. Spike Maynard, well, but ultimately, we have to have our eyes open in the nightmare. The sleeper, as the saying goes, must awaken. And that is that we live in empire. And a lot of us expect somehow or another that we're going to stop being empire just because. Empires seldom stop being empires on their own initiative. And that's where we live now. That's our word. We are empire. And everything you're seeing is the maintenance of empire. I'm sure you know by now that the stock market took a big steamer today. Closed down what? Yeah, down over 4%. The whole damn world sold off today. Oh, they're nervous about Europe and the currency crisis in Europe, and they're nervous about a general global downturn. Jobs numbers came out. Another 400,000 people filed for unemployment. Which means that... But what kind of jobs are they going to have? I guess we could move them to China. Don't know how that would play out with Sandy Rios, seeing as how all the female workers would apparently have to go and get their the monthly gynecological exam, and she hates that. Yeah, if you remember the show on Tuesday. Yeah, the Standard & Poor's lost 4.78%. The Dow Jones vomited 4.31%. and it was officially declared to be a correction. It's a correction. Like the market is some sort of little kid in Catholic school who gets his wrist slapped by Sister Whackbottom with her ruler. It's a correction. But here's the fun part about the correction. Sam Stovall's chief of investment strategist at Standard & Poor's, and according to the New York Times, he says, we could have another couple of weeks to go before it bottoms. What happens if it's 3 weeks? What happens if it's four? What happens if, by giving the teabaggers their way, we've just absolutely screwed ourselves? I don't know. I don't have the answer to that. David in South Carolina, one of the fraternity of Davids, says there's nothing on the left comparable to the tea crackers. The tea crackers have been given free airtime on every major news network. The tea crackers even got primetime air for Michelle Bachmann to deliver the tea cracker response to the State of the Union address. Did we ever see Dennis Kucinich, Bernie Sanders, or Ralph Nader given time to deliver a State of the Union address response? Of course not. David noting what we need now is for our side needs to run ads of the stock market ticker going with the clip of John Boehner saying, we got 98% of what we wanted. Somehow it seems statistically unlikely that the 2% that the 2% is actually the market tanking. Oh, yeah, we didn't want that. Yes, you did! Every policy contained within the Obama capitulation was pointed directly at this. Not that anybody's out there listening to Paul Krugman, Dean Baker, any of the actual smart people who are paying attention. This is a direct and proximate consequence. As is usually the case, the United States of America got the financial flu, and the world the way the metaphor usually works is we got a cold and the world gets the flu. But the problem is we have the flu. What does the world get? And the world is scrambling. As if it didn't have enough to worry about, Japan, for instance, had to jump in. They had to jump in and try to stabilize their currency. In France, the CAC closed down 3.9%. Stocks were down 3.43% in Britain. The DAX index dropped 3.4%. And I'm no economist. But the teabaggers are basically ignorant little weirdos in Lipton festooned tricorn hats standing around America screaming, burn, baby, burn! Aren't they? Sure seems like it to me. I got a pitch for an interview the other day, inviting me to interview Robert C. Hockett, professor of law at Cornell University and a financial law expert, talking about the debt ceiling capitulation. Here's the pull quote on this. I think it's important that you listen, that we pay attention to this. Again, this guy's from Cornell. He says, in reaching agreement on raising the debt ceiling, Congress and the President have probably averted what would have amounted to financial suicide on the part of the nation. Notice his operative word use of the word probably. The means by which they reach their agreement, however, could well turn out to amount to political suicide on the part of the principals. Okay. But here's this is the important part. By failing to confront and educate the financially illiterate Tea Party rump of their faction, the Republican leadership has left itself open to an electoral putsch that will oust the last admittedly minimal vestiges of human intellect from the Republican Party. Did you get that? By failing to confront and educate the financially illiterate Tea Party rump, but they're not the rump. They're at the helm. They're driving the car. They're driving the bus. They're no rump. They are the reality of the Republican Party. The Republican leadership has left itself open to an electoral putsch that will oust the last admittedly minimal vestiges of human intellect from the Republican Party. In other words, after this, the deluge. I think Professor Hockett is saying that the Republican Party is not going to become less teabaggy, it's going to become more teabaggy. For all those sunshine and violets Democrats out there saying, oh, we're going to take the House back in 2012, think again. I've said it before, I'll say it again. How are you going to get rid of all those baggers from the Confederacy? How are you going to do that? How are you going to fund and run progressives? Because in many ways, the Democratic so-called majority that we had in 2008 to 2010 was a bit of a fraud. Because that majority was comprised of a big chunk of so-called blue dogs who were basically Republican light, who were imitation Republicans, and got in that way because you're not going to run any straight-up progressive liberals in the 1st District of Alabama or the 3rd District of Mississippi and have a rat's chance in hell because, remember, nobody in the Obama administration took Howard Dean seriously about continuing the 50-state strategy. They were going to go right back to the low-hanging fruit strategy. Teabag Republicans ain't going nowhere. Especially because instead of getting in and engaging the Democratic Party, a lot of people want to go, you know what I want to do? I want to go vote for third-party candidate here. If you want to change something, you have to change the system it works in. It's nice to think about just chucking it all and starting all over. I was looking at an email last night from Lottie about this, and you can go and investigate it at conconcon.org. conconcon.org. It's a conference on a constitutional convention being hosted at Harvard University next month, September. It is co-sponsored. It's co-sponsored on one side by an arguably progressive sort of Harvard professor. The other half of the sponsorship is the teabaggers. I'd love to figure out a way to get up there and broadcast this, you know, via Ustream and the Hornstream. I'd love to do that for you guys, if nothing but for entertainment value. Can you imagine? Can you imagine teabaggers trying to talk about the Constitution in light of the fact that they wander around with a Constitution, an imaginary one, that exists only in their collective semi-consciousness? Can you imagine? Because the purpose of this is to determine the feasibility of calling for a national constitutional convention to change the government. My God, can you imagine a constitutional convention just a swimming in teabaggers? Can you imagine a constitutional convention with the millions, if not billions, of Citizens United dollars that would pour into that? I mean, my God, you'd have to use a shoehorn the size of a bumper jack just to wedge in all the godforsaken lobbyists that would be attending that constitutional convention. But this conference should be interesting. Well, I don't want to have a constitutional convention unless we can all agree that we're going to put the Pledge of Allegiance in the Constitution and the Bible. Well, that's one of the fundamental failings of the framers of the first this year Constitution. Probably why it ain't working out so good now. Because Jeebus ain't there. Glory. Teabaggers! But let me finish with the pull quote from Professor Hockett at Cornell. By failing to confront, rebut, and articulately expose to the general public the financial ruin insisted upon by the Republicans, in turn, the President and other Democratic leaders have virtually guaranteed a 1937-style double-dip recession, which is apt to result in their ouster from office in 2012. Should that happen, then the nation's suicide will not have been avoided. It will have been only postponed. I thought about that pitch when I was reading the New York Times story about the stock market close. And part of that had to do with the fact that some of this nervousness in the market, so-called, has to do precisely with the fact that so-called investors are now worrying and wondering about whether the United States is about to go into precisely that double-dip recession. Some of us would tend to call it a depression that the good professor there was referring to. Those are strong words, he says. I mean, my God. By failing to confront, rebut, and articulately expose to the general public the financial ruin insisted upon by the Republicans, in turn, the President and other Democratic leaders have virtually guaranteed a 1937-style double-dip recession, which is apt to result in their ouster from office in 2012. Should that happen, then the nation's suicide will not have been avoided. It will have been only postponed. Ponder that for a moment, if you will. Ponder November 2012. Ponder the day after the election, when the Senate has become a Republican body. And the House is still a teabag body. Because, you know, any empty slots that are filled by Republicans will be filled by teabag Republicans. Now try to imagine 2013. Try to imagine 2014. Imagine a teabag House, a teabag Senate. And just for good measure, how's about a teabag president? President Perry. President Buckman. President Willard Romney. Any of them. And tell me that that ends well. I could use a little optimism there. At present, the greatest single greatest manifestation of my optimism is going out and buying a goddamn lottery ticket. You know, I used to say that the lottery is a voluntary tax on the stupid, but actually the lottery is a voluntary tax on the hopelessly optimistic. We'd better start thinking, asking ourselves, because visualization is an important tool in the human toolkit. We'd better start asking ourselves, what does this look like going forward? You know, we would be fools not to think that the media don't have a huge hand in all of this. Happened to be up early today and caught a little bit of, because at 7 o'clock in the morning, you know, can't deal with SpongeBob, and you know the channels I usually watch are running infomercials for the stretch jeans, and God knows the network, CBS, ABC, etc. Today Show, please. So Morning Joe it is, and they're talking about the FAA crisis. And they're talking about the impasse between the Senate and the House. And Mike Barnicle, who should know better, says, yes, the FAA is being held up because two politicians can't agree. Honey, would you go get me the Elvis gun and a peanut butter and banana sandwich for breakfast? I'm going to shoot the TV box. It wasn't two politicians. They were talking about John Mica, the member of the House from Florida, and Jay Rockefeller from West Virginia. It wasn't two politicians. Jay Rockefeller wasn't holding up the FAA. It was John Mica. Who insisted? Now get this. We were talking about it. I talked about a constitutional convention a few minutes ago. Remember historically that we had a constitutional convention to draft the present one because a few people had decided that the Articles of Confederation didn't work when in fact they could have and would have and had been. But it was deemed by a few people that there was just too much democracy going on out there. We had to do something about it. Well, remember that so there was no constitution in place per se. Well, there is a constitution in place now, so things like due process and equal protection would have to obtain in the formation of any constitutional convention. Wouldn't that be fun? So anyway, John Mica inserted a poison pill into the FAA bill that said that in a union election, people not voting, you know, in any election, there's people who voted for, people who voted against, and a whole bunch of people who just didn't vote. That in a union election over at the FAA, the votes would be counted as follows. People voting for would be counted as votes for unionization. People voting against would be counted as people voting against unionization. And then everybody who didn't vote would also be counted as a no vote against unionization. Whoa, huh? You know, some of us stay home, some of us choose not to vote in particular plebiscites as a form of a vote in its own right. I mean, witness Joe Manchin versus John Racey, and me sitting there going, oh, no, neither one of you, mm-mm. Well, in John Micah's world, that would be a no vote. And just as a means of taking of understanding where that come or what that come, how that works out, get this: the folks at Think Progress looked at John Micah of Florida's last election. In the last election, in 2010, John Micah of Florida got 69% of the votes. He got 69% of the votes cast by voters in his district who cast a ballot. He got about 185,000 votes. He got 185,000 votes to 83,000 votes against him. But there were 312,000 registered voters in his district who didn't vote at all. So if you use John Micah's union rules for the FAA voting process against him, then he loses. Because suddenly he goes from having 69% of the vote to having 32% of the vote. And he loses 400,000 to 185,000. I'm feeling pretty safe in assuming that John Micah would not like that outcome, that he'd feel like he'd been cheated. But he's perfectly willing to cheat people who want to have a union inside the FAA. Now, they say that there's a fix in for the whole FAA problem. The details are sketchy at best. But Harry Reid announced that there is a deal to reopen the FAA. Negotiators had reached a deal that would end the partial shutdown. MSNBC reporting it would effectively, that's one of those worry words, effectively be the same as a clean extension. It doesn't address John Micah's union vote cheating scandal, issue. But it will let the furloughed employees go back to work before Congress comes back sometime in September, probably with a monstrous hangover. New York Times just now reporting that disapproval rating for Congress is at a record 82%. Is it any wonder? But bear in mind, within that 82%, there are numbers. Within that 82% disapproval rating of Congress, there's a whole bunch of teabaggers who, I'm sick of how liberal them liberals are. My God, we need to get back to the values of our founding fathers. That's what we need to do. Take our country back. And that's probably a more frightening percentage than you or I would even dare contemplate. But at least there's possibly some kind of deal Because it's not just the FAA workers, it's a whole bunch of people working construction jobs during the prime season for doing that. And since it's FAA construction, that means they're earning money under Davis-Bacon, which provides prevailing wage jobs. These aren't little minimum wage jobs. These are household-sustaining jobs that John Micah and John Boehner and that whole filthy crowd of teabaggers who campaigned in 2000, it's about the jobs! And then proceeded to put up nothing but anti-abortion bills and anti-union bills and, Jesus, you know. And that last vestige of what the professor called human intellect that remains in the Republican Party probably looked up and said, you know what? We're putting people out of work. We can probably blame this on that one, but some people might see through it, so let's see if we can do a deal. But at least people who, you know, I saw a story this morning about a guy who was looking at canceling his two-year-old's birthday party. Yeah, I know, life is not going to end. But when you've got a two-year-old, she's not going to be a two-year-old for very long. And getting the pictures of her with the hand in the cake or, you know, getting terrified of the clown or whatever. You only get one go-round on those. Your precious little youngest only sits in that little chair smiling at you. At 5 years old on the first day of kindergarten once. So maybe that guy will get to have his daughter's second birthday party. Maybe. And maybe the furloughed FAA employees can just come back to work. So that's the evening's filibobster. Your calls are coming up. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, BOBKINCAID, @gmail.com. It's easy any way you care to attempt it. Couple of lines open. Feel free to chime right in. New callers always welcome. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice, raising money in August so there can be a September for the horn. The button is at PayPal. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, so is the snail mail address. I'm Bob Kincaid, and we will, in fact, be back. Green News Report along the way as well.
Come fly with me, let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come fly with me, let's fly away. Come fly with me, let's float down to Peru. In Llama Land, there's a one-man band, and he'll toot his flute for you. Come fly with me, let's take off in the blue. Once I get you up there, where the air is rarefied, we'll just fly starry-eyed. Once I get you up there, I'll be holding you. Angels cheer, 'cause we're together. Weather-wise, it's such a lovely day. Just say the words and we'll beat the birds down to Acapulco Bay. It's perfect for a flying day. honeymoon, they say. Come fly with me, let's fly away. I get you up there where the air is rarefied. We'll just glide starry-eyed. Once I get you up there, I'll be holding you so near. You may hear angels cheer, 'cause we're together. Weather-wise, it's such a lovely day. You just say the words and we'll beat the birds down to Acapulco Bay. It's perfect for a flying honeymoon, they say. Come fly with me, let's fly, let's fly. Pack up, let's fly away.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, August 4, 2011.
Clearly, Nickelodeon is pushing a global warming agenda.
The latest commie pinko hoaxer enemy of Fox News is SpongeBob SquarePants.
SpongeBob is talking a lot about global warming, and he's only looking at it from one point of view.
Radioactive fish in Vermont.
Mmm.
Salmonella turkey burgers everywhere else.
Delicious.
Wolves under the gun in Wyoming. Plus,
the economic impact of severe weather events is only projected to grow in future years as the frequency and intensity of weather events continues to grow.
The high cost of doing nothing about climate change.
All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
The Department of Education using SpongeBob SquarePants now to teach kids about global warming. The government agency showed kids with cartoon and handed out books that blame man for global warming, but they did not tell kids that that is actually a disputed fact.
Disputed by who? The scientists on Fox and Friends? Brother, this is your Green News Report. Okay, Dez, so they went after Tinky Winky, they destroyed Sesame Street, and now it's on to SpongeBob SquarePants, the enemy of the people.
Yeah, the Fox and Friends morning show Brain Trust is at it again.
The Department of Education teaches kids about global warming. Fox and Friends is up in arms, and Steve Doocy says,
is it just one of those gigantic climactic, you know, phases that we're going? For a while we're cold, and then we get warmer, and then we get colder and warmer.
Oh, Steve Doocy, those are called seasons. Now on to the real news. Another massive food recall. Ag giant Cargill is recalling 36 million pounds of ground turkey due to possible salmonella contamination, making it one of the largest meat recalls on record, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The Centers for Disease Control says the strain involved is antibiotic resistant and has killed one person and sickened at least 76 more in 26 states since March. Cargill's voluntarily suspended operations at the factory in Arkansas that distributed the ground turkey under many different brand names. We have all the details at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. The timing of this newest food poisoning outbreak couldn't be more ironic. The Cargill ground turkey recall comes right after the Republican majority in the House of Representatives voted to further cut the budget for food safety testing at the federal level. And long-awaited legislation to update the nation's food safety laws, including provisions to give the government authority to order mandatory recalls, has remained stalled in Congress due to, you guessed it,
SpongeBob SquarePants?
No, opposition from congressional Republicans.
Ah.
Radioactive fish in Vermont. A fish caught in the river near the Vermont Yankee nuclear power plant has tested positive for traces of radioactive strontium. The Vermont Department of Health says more study is needed to identify the source of the contamination. The Vermont Yankee nuclear power plant has had numerous issues with leaking radioactive isotopes in the last several years, and now Entergy, the private company that owns the plant, is suing to force Vermont to extend the plant's operating license.
Has SpongeBob SquarePants been put under a Geiger counter lately?
Not that we know of.
Maybe we should.
Wyoming and the U.S. Department of Interior have reached an agreement that would end federal protection for wolves in the state. Hunters in Wyoming will be allowed to kill more than half of the wolves who don't read signs and stray outside the borders of Yellowstone National Park. Wyoming has agreed to maintain at least 100 of the 230 gray wolves outside Yellowstone, but the rest can be legally shot on site as predators.
By Sarah Palin.
Finally,
we've seen droughts in Texas, wildfires in Arizona and New Mexico, flooding in Tennessee. In 2011, almost $28 billion in damages have already been caused by catastrophic events, and the hurricane season is just starting.
That was Senator Dick Durbin, Democrat of Illinois, chairing a Senate committee hearing this week on the link between extreme weather events and climate change and the increasing costs of responding to natural disasters.
The economic impact of severe weather events is only projected to grow in future years as the frequency and intensity of weather events continues to grow. The federal government needs to do more to be ready to protect federal assets and to provide disaster assistance on an increasing frequency.
But federal agencies in science and research are bracing for major funding cuts over the next 10 years as part of the debt ceiling deal brokered between Obama and Republicans on Capitol Hill. Atmospheric scientist Dr. Don Werbley of the University of Illinois testified that more extreme weather events are already in the pipeline, and the window of opportunity to cut emissions and avoid the worst effects of climate change is closing.
The real response from these emissions occur 20 to 30 years after the initial emissions. So we're seeing the effect right now of the emissions we made 20, 30 years ago. Emissions since then have continued to increase.
Oh, great. So the worst is yet to come. You know, you'd think that the Republicans would be concerned about the costs for these increasing natural disasters. Of course, that presumes they actually care about the cost of anything. For more on that and the stories we did not get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Download us anytime on iTunes, listen to us on Stitcher, and follow us on the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
SpongeBob, you're wasting me precious carbon dioxide.
Carbon dioxide?
I'm pumping it into the atmosphere, boy.
SpongeBob SquarePants!
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
See, that there is Brian Reznor right there, what you done heard. 5.5 minutes past the hour, second hour of this Thursday night program. I'm Bob, this is The Horn. You know, every night of the program, we try to raise a piddling $60. That's six folks at $10 a piece, which works out to about 4 cents and change per hour of the program per month. And if you'd like to be one of those six, or if you'd like to be all six, we had an individual earlier today, thank you very kindly, who filled up five slots yesterday. And, of course, we have long-standing friends like Maura and many others who do their part every month to take up several slots. Six slots, $10 a piece. Pretty, well, you know. I don't think we can make it any cheaper. And what do you get if you practice? Oh, you can't afford that. Oh, all right, yeah. I need to knock. Yeah, we'll knock it down to 3 cents an hour. You guys, great group in the chat room tonight. By the way, if you've never been to the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room, feel free to go in. The conversation is fine, and it too is free. So, why am I doing this? Let's go to the phones. Sounds like a good idea to me. How about to you? Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Roberto.
Well, hey, Juanita, what's up?
I'm celebrating a birthday today of the greatest man I know.
Barack Obama?
No, my son.
Oh, okay. I'm more in tune with celebrating Charles's birthday, too. Happy birthday to Charles. How's the birthday going?
Well, he took himself to a movie.
Oh, really? Any idea what he went to see?
Captain America.
And why not? Yeah.
Yeah. Just to see if it's any good. He's probably going to the Planet of the Apes tomorrow.
I got a feeling Charles and I share a lot of common tastes.
I would imagine, yeah. Could be. Okay. Yeah, I wanted to put you into a great shock about that. I was thinking Obama was great because right now I don't.
Yeah, and, well, me neither. That's why I figured there was another birthday out there. Had to be. I'd rather spend Charles' birthday with him than Barack's with his.
Well, if you could talk to him and make him understand, but I don't think you can.
Okay, let's torment the language for a minute. Juanita, he doesn't not understand. This is who he is. I think we have to get, we have to really get right down to the bone with that, and the sooner the better.
Well,
like he'd be FDR if he could.
Yeah.
If he could be, if he wanted to be FDR, we'd hear a lot more quotes from FDR instead of quotes from Ronald Reagan. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right. But what you gonna do? I just got a few things to flip at you. Did you see when they had made the agreement in Congress to sell us out to the Solvent Green Farm? Did you ever see Boner singing Zippity Doo Dah?
No.
Yeah. Yeah, he was talking to somebody about it, and then he walk to wherever he was going singing Zippity Doo Dah.
Well, why am I not surprised he'd sing something from Song of the South?
Yeah. Well, you know, the next line is, my, oh, my, oh, what a wonderful day.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Plenty of sunshine coming my way. Zippity Doo Dah, zippity day.
Yeah. And then,
Mr. Bluebird on my shoulder. I used to know the whole thing.
Me too. And ask, have you told Tracy about the 4th of July fiasco 2 or 3 years ago?
Which one?
The one, you know, where the guy covered himself with hot dogs and...
No, I'd done a real good job of forgetting that, Juanita.
Really? I think she would like to see that. You know, they'll give her even more understanding.
Quite possibly.
And then my least favorite word, and has been before we had a majority, bipartisanship. I'm so sick of that word.
Oh, no, bipartisanship is a way... Bipartisanship in the current usage is a way of saying that Democrats gave in to Republican terroristic demands again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And now I want to know what happened to FERC.
Well, what do you mean?
What kind of accident did he have? See, I listened to some of your shows I didn't get to hear, and I didn't know anything had happened to him. I talked to him the other day.
And a day later, he fell out of a tree.
He fell out of a tree?
Yeah.
Oh.
About 15 feet. Landed flat on his back.
Woo!
Yeah, it hurt real bad. And you know what? As soon as he's feeling better, Juanita, and I know he's completely well, he's going to hurt even worse.
He's going to what?
He's going to hurt even worse.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's why I ought to, you know. No, we had a little ambulance ride and everything. And now Margie's having surgery in about 2 weeks. You know, there's just not a hell of a lot of let up around here.
What kind of surgery?
Gallbladder.
Another gallbladder, huh?
Yeah, we are down to two gallbladder. After Margie's surgery, we will be down to two gallbladders out of five.
Wow.
Agnes's will be gone, Doodle's will be gone, and Margie's will be gone.
Yeah, I had to.
But
have
see,
mine.
Agnes and Margie and it's, you know, it's not that surprising to see a woman of a certain age like Agnes.
Right.
Yeah, you know that. Yeah. But teenagers, it's downright rare.
Yeah.
And that's a function of living around here, frankly.
Yeah, very possibly. Well, tell Ferg to hang in. Whatever, and I hope everything else goes well. And... you know, when you got a little family like that, things do happen. Things happen. Anyway, I woke up this morning, and my air had gone out. And it is really, really hot down here.
Oh, is it back?
Really
is it? No, I mean, you don't want to be without your AC, Juanita. Is it back up and running?
My son had wired up a plug-in, another plug-in, and it's working now. But I was thinking, oh, my God, what am I going to do?
No, I mean, that's where you are there, Central Florida, that's a crisis of epic proportions.
Yeah, and see, we have such high humidity down here, too, is what makes it really, really bad, I guess. I guess that makes it worse, that's what they say. But And now my son, you know, he's real, got a lot of allergies and stuff, and he can smell, what you call it in the air, pollution.
Yeah.
And, even before I would, something I don't notice. But, anyway. Yeah, it's pretty bad, but I understand the storm has precipitated, or whatever called. Emily?
It's basically stalled over the island of Hispaniola, isn't it?
Somewhere in that vicinity, and yeah, they really needed that, didn't they?
No.
Poor people. I'm telling you, that's terrible.
And you know how I like to watch Anthony Bourdain's No Reservations. I think back to the Haiti episode that he did, and he spent a significant amount of time up there in the relief camp that Sean Penn runs. And and in that episode, they're getting ready for a hurricane. And
what's so sad about it is that they need some places to live. You know, but no. Now you heard what about Lieberman? What he's wanting to do? Get all that good old Social Security number and put it in our war chest.
Did that just blow your mind?
I know.
And for those who might not have caught up with that, it's just. It was breathtaking when I saw it. Joe Lieberman.
I had to not watch it. I had to hear about it. I just couldn't stand to watch him.
Well, for good reason. I mean, this is nauseating.
Yeah.
All right. Let me see if I can do my Joe Lieberman here. Hang on.
Oh God.
I want to indicate today to my colleagues that Senator Coburn and I are working again on a bipartisan proposal to secure Social Security over the long term. We hope to have that done in time. To also forward to the special committee for their consideration. So, bottom line, we can't protect these entitlements and also have the national defense we need to protect us in a dangerous world while we're at war with Islamist extremists who attacked us on 9/11 and will be for a long time to come.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can't have Social Security.
No.
Because
protect us somewhat.
I'm supposed to be a professional talker and everything, right? Or pretend to be. What do you say to something like that, Juanita?
I don't know. I mean, he's just full of it. And did you see what's the new defense secretary now? I know his name.
Panetta?
Did you hear him talking today?
No, I did not.
Oh, boy. We just can't have this cutting out, you know, funds. We just can't, you know, it's going to take away from our firemen and blah, blah. Well, no, it's not, because they don't get what they need anyway.
Well, but beyond that, see, that's one of the flaws in the thinking that produced this, the philosophy behind this super Congress, this 12-person... That the Republicans would somehow, because defense cuts were in there, that Republicans would somehow negotiate in good faith because, well, then that, if they don't, that puts defense spending into the mix and the super Congress could just go crazy with a knife. And you know what? That was supposed to keep the Republicans honest. But come on, Juanita. I mean, you know, you didn't fall off the turnip truck just now. And I was born at night, not last night. And do you think, because I don't, that the Republicans won't sit there and go, oh, go ahead and slash defense spending with armies in the field. We'll be happy to hang that on that one.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, isn't that how they operate? I mean, are we, you know, you understand it. I understand it, Juanita. The whole Blessed Horn family understands it. The people who listen to, you know, Rick Smith and Malloy and Hartman and the whole, and watch Rachel and all of that stuff. They understand that the words good faith and Republican cannot exist in the same sentence,
right.
Kind of the way antimatter and matter can't exist in the same universe. Because it just goes boom. I mean, they just can't. It's like trying to cram two magnets together, you know, from the, you know what I mean? And they just pushed it. No!
Well, you know, did you hear the one black caucus congressman said it was like...
Oh, a sugar-coated Satan sandwich?
Sandwich, yeah.
Yeah.
I wasn't familiar with him, but and John Congers, he said... You need to learn, you know, he really came out strong against Obama.
Oh, he said, didn't John Conyers say, I'm pretty much done?
Yeah. And he said, it wasn't the Republicans that said to cut Medicare, it was you, Obama.
There you go. It was, you know.
And
I have no patience for those people who say, well, you know, he only did that because he knew the Republicans would reject him.
Well, let them reject something. I don't care. Stand up whether it passes or not. Stand up for we the people.
But Juanita, you know, we keep saying that and we keep saying that, but I've come to a realization. I'm okay at this place in my soul right now where I understand, you know, that saying stand up to Barack Obama is a message that Barack Obama is never going to get because he thinks he is, okay? He thinks he is standing up. And in point of fact, it would do us a world of good to understand that he is standing up. He is standing up for exactly what he believes in because he believes that Medicare and Social Security are a problem for the United States. And that's a real tough little sober up, come to Jesus moment for somebody. For a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a moment that a lot of people are avoiding. I had an email from Sandra earlier today, of a column or a blog posting or whatever by a fella. And she said. She said over at Huffington Post, the author is a guy named Trey Ellis. And Sandra just said, thoughts from the deluded black elite, new meme, wait until the second term. And, you know, I knew that would come around sooner or later. Well, you know, once he gets that second term, boy, he's going to be out of the blocks and running hard. I mean, second term, won't have to worry about reelection. Yeah, then he'll be the liberal we know he is. Bull. Bull, 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 Juanita. You want to join me with a bull?
He don't like liberals. He don't like us.
No. We need our... Remember, we're mentally ill and we need our heads examined?
Yeah, and he told Bernie Sanders, he said, you progressives, you see the glass half empty when he tried to talk to him. So, you know...
Yeah, and we just want to keep the glass empty, full, half, whatever. But no, the Republicans want to, you know, toast each other and throw it into the fireplace.
And I heard I heard a little snippet on Fox where they were talking about that it would have been better if our economy had gone under because then it would. Teach people lessons.
Yeah, because that's what we need is a lesson.
Yeah.
What lesson do we need to learn, Juanita? That we need to just go ahead and give up on Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid and just live in a sort of Milton Friedman-esque, Ayn Rand post-apocalyptic anarcho-capitalist wonderland? Is that the lesson we need to learn?
I don't know. Well, didn't you say that somebody from his office, the president's office, say that she hoped everybody learned a lesson?
Yeah, that's Stephanie Cutter. deputy advisor to the president. Yeah, I hope everybody learned something from this. I hope we all learned. You know, that's something you say. That's something you say, and it, you know, it's like that movie. You remember A Christmas Story? It's so cute. They run it a million times every Christmas season, and the little kid gets his tongue stuck to the flagpole in the freezing weather. Well, I hope we have all learned something from this.
Yeah.
Jeez.
But those people, they're like that Tea Party woman saying that nobody needed to work two jobs. They just need to cut down on what they pay out.
You're right.
Lady, sometimes you work two and three jobs just to pay your light bill and a roof over your head. Hopefully both.
Well, that's just because that's just because folks aren't the right kind of people. You know, take that and put that up against Representative Paul Brown of Georgia saying, well, if the economy tanks, people will drop their country club memberships.
Oh, yeah, I heard that. Oh, yeah, we got that country club membership we need to get out of.
Well, they'll be buying Buicks instead of Mercedes's.
We drive our rusty old trucks.
You got up this morning. You didn't have air conditioning in your house. I don't have air conditioning in the truck because, I mean, the money's just not there to fix it.
We don't either.
I got to, you know, right now the two tires on the back of my truck look like I'm taking it to the drag strip every weekend because they slicks.
Yeah. Hopefully you can find some used ones. We got some places down here. The truck we had, it was hard to find them, but another problem is the rims are starting to rust out.
Same here. Same here.
But we can do that.
But that just makes us uniquely American, Juanita.
Oh, yeah. I'm proud to be a uniquely American.
Or at least I know I'm unique.
Yeah, there you go. Well, Bob, I'm going to not take any more of your time. And
well, do please tell Charles that I said, and the whole Horn family said happy birthday to him, would you?
Thank you.
Bless your heart and bless his heart.
He is the greatest man I know.
I have no doubt of it whatsoever.
He is a great guy.
And I'd love to.
He's been through a lot, and, you know.
And his head's still, high.
Yep.
Holds his head up. You know, that's the thing. Our betters, the wealthy of this country, couldn't last a day with some of the stuff that people who struggle to get by have to deal with. They wouldn't last a day.
Nope. Well, I would rather be in our shoes than to be in theirs.
Well, I like our spirit. I like our spirit a lot better. I like their bank accounts better, but I like our spirit better.
Their life is so empty. They've got empty lives. They really do.
That's true, because there's always something to keep our interest. Sweating a power bill, a water bill, air conditioner goes out, need new tires, rims rusting out. Yeah. We do not, Juanita, live lives of indolent boredom.
No,
what Forrest Gump say? At least I ain't led no humdrum life. Juanita, you have a wonderful evening and tell Charles happy birthday.
One more thing I'll say.
Sure.
If you ever drove down the road and your wheel's starting to come off?
Haven't been there yet. Knock wood. Yeah, that's wood.
I'm sure you've got other experiences too. I got a ton of them. We could write a book on
Well, you know, it rains. It rains on Agnes in the bedroom.
Yeah. Well, my bedroom leaks too. My living room leaks. I'm lucky that it only leaks those places. But I have a ton of water come in, in buckets. I got buckets set around. But you know, I was raised around leaking roofs.
Yeah, move the bucket. Move the bucket, empty the bucket, put the bucket back.
Yeah. My little mama, she'd climb up on the roof and try to patch it. The house we lived in was one of those Florida real flat roofs. and she'd take her bucket of tar up there and try to get it working, you know.
Now, see the trouble. See the trouble I get in. That, you know, there's Benny in the chat room. Bob makes Agnes sleep over. No, I offered to sleep in the rain, and she said she likes that side of the bed.
You can't move it at all?
No. It only fits one way. It's a small bedroom. Small house.
Okay.
Take care, Juanita.
All right. And I love all of y'all.
Oh, we love you, too. You take care.
As Tracy said, God bless everybody.
Thank you.
And everyone.
Bye now.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Juanita, a mighty strong woman from Central Florida. And a dear, dear friend. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Well, hey, Fancy.
Hey, dude.
Dude.
Other considerations. You had me laughing out loud. That good to hear, Juanita. And, yeah, she's spirit. That was beautiful to hear. Now, I've got some thoughts, and they're not going to... And the phrase that has come to mind, and you're going to hear me using this for the next few years, is that we must learn to vote defensively. We must promote defensive voting.
Yeah, just like defensive driving. Watch out for the other guy.
The defense, because what's happening here is I'm hearing an awful lot of disappointment with our candidates, and I certainly share that. I was just so pleased when I saw things turn around and they didn't. And I was thinking, incidentally, your Lieberman sort of sounds like, was it Dopey Dog?
Well, yeah, that is Droopy. Because if you do Droopy, you're doing Lieberman.
Yeah, Droopy. Yeah, I'm going, Droopy Dog! You know, and unintended consequences, he could have actually been vice president.
If there was anything good to come out of Bush versus Gore, that's it, Fancy.
Who knows what bullet we missed on that?
That
one.
Miserable piece of human excrescence would have been a heartbeat away from the presidency.
But I want to just get back to this defensive voting concept, and that is that when we consider all our possibilities, we need to get our cute little butts out there and vote a highly Democratic ticket, because what could be worse, you know, it could be worse. What could be worse is another march in line, fall in lines, conservative Supreme Court appointment.
Well, yeah,
we just cannot have that. If we do,
that's kind of where I live. I'm frustrated. I'm past frustrated, Fancy. I'm downright disgusted.
I'm thinking if President Obama were to appoint a Supreme Court person, they'd never get approved. I mean, look at what happened with Warren.
Yeah.
You just hold it off and
well,
hold it
you
on.
Know, the Senate is on vacation now with scads, Fancy, scads of judicial appointments just laying around, to the point that the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, with those deadly blue eyes, John Roberts. Now, he's no liberal, but even he is saying we are in the midst of a judicial crisis.
Well, and I understand that they put, and I don't understand the process here, but they're not really in recess, so the president can't do a recess appointment.
Right.
Now, that's crappy. Now, moving away from that, I was hearing about what's happening in the libertarian paradise of Somalia. And in Somalia, they don't have any regulations. It is absolutely a libertarian paradise. If you're smart enough and strong enough, you can do any goddamn thing you want. And so one of the things about these smart and strong people of Somalia is because there's a pretty bad drought, which has caused starvation, is, you know, these dudes are going in and hijacking the food coming in.
Yeah, oh yeah, they're not allowing it to get to the people who need it.
Yeah, and they're hijacking the food and then ransoming it back to NGOs. How cool is that, libertarians?
That is some free market economics on steroids,
Fancy. And I was thinking this morning while between barfing over this and really thinking about it, you know, a smart, strong person could go in there and set up a factory. There's no age limit, so you could certainly have child laborers.
Absolutely.
And there's no minimum wage, so you could work them for a quart of water and the equivalent of a Happy Meal every day. And isn't that clever?
Well, you better be careful, Fancy, or the University of Chicago is going to give you a doctorate in economics and start hustling you for a Nobel Prize.
Hey, this, you know, this, I just cannot think of anything more despicable than stealing or hijacking aid going to the starving and then ransoming it back.
But
awful.
But Fancy, that's the right-wing business model. That's not despicable. That's free market capitalism.
Let the market, the invisible hand of the market. Oh my.
I mean, yeah. Really, Somalia and Haiti are little Milton Friedman laboratories. They're little Ayn Rand paradises.
Now, I'm going to get.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not being a smart aleck, and I don't think you are either. I mean, I mean that for serious. I'm not being ironic. There's no humor in that.
No. I mean, this is the truth to tell. And look at Somalia right now. There is no law. Well, there's no government, so there's no law. There's no restrictions. There's no, you know, pollution. Excuse me. You can do anything you're strong enough to do. And the problem is that as soon as you got that worked out, somebody bigger and stronger is going to come and take it away from you.
And there is always somebody bigger and stronger.
Bigger and stronger. And talking about the air conditioning, I live in Arizona, so I don't have air conditioning, good Lord. We because it's dry heat here.
Yeah.
Dry like a blast furnace dry. And so we have coolers. Which work most of the time.
Yeah, swamp coolers.
And they really, I'm not complaining. I mean, I had an air-conditioned place for a while, and oh my God, paying those bills. So having a cooler is really not such a bad thing. But there's always time of the year where there's humidity, and when the kids were here, this was the time we went to the mall, went to the movies, ate at whatever fast food we had a coupon for. And our theme during that period was called Other People's Air Conditioning. And we're hearing that again. So we're in my house, and I have a series of fans set up in this kind of very complicated geometric that if you sit here, you're comfortable. If you move a foot that way, you're not. And the cat and I have worked out our where we are comfortable places. And that's it. That's where we are until further notice. Now, I had a friend. Juanita talked about a friend who was having breathing problems, respiratory allergies.
Yeah, that's her son.
And I have a friend who moved here from somewhere else, and she's having the same thing. I mean, oh, it's god awful.
Well, Fancy, we live in an America where, I mean, you remember back 50 years ago, 75 years ago, if you were wealthy and you lived up east, they would and you were sickly, you know, the man, they'd say, well, you know, sir, take your wife to the Southwest. Down to Arizona for the climate. Right?
Okay, so then they'd get here and they'd say, what was that tree we had in our front yard that's so pretty? Let's plant one of those.
Well, not just that, but they would go and they would get some relief because of the climatic change, okay? But in 2011, United States, that no longer obtains because there is coal-fired electricity all over this country. The single largest contributor to breathing difficulties is coal-fired electricity. It is August of 2011, and you know, my mind never goes very far away from that young man named Elbert Gervonta Woods, Icky Woods' son in Cincinnati. Brilliant young athlete, had asthma, practiced football in the August heat of southern Ohio, came home, had an asthma attack, died.
And died.
And the doctor said it's because of what's in the air. And it's because of coal-fired power plants.
But I have a one can get some respite. And you may have a problem with this, but I used to work at a casino.
I got a problem with that.
And okay, I worked at a casino, and the casino where I worked, and I think most of them do, have negative ion emitters shooting into the air.
Right. I was told in Vegas last year that they actually pump raw oxygen into the room to keep the drunks gambling.
Oh yeah, you and I talked about this.
Yeah, that was
when we were outside of the casino on the ship.
Right.
But the casino that I worked in had, they pumped negative ions into the air, and I'd go into work, and I went in at 8 o'clock in the morning, and by 8:30 I was feeling better.
Yeah.
Just a little perky, felt a little bit better, you know, and I had a really nice response to negative ions being pumped into the air, of feeling good. So I told my friend, and so she's now going to the casino. She's retired, and some days she goes and plays penny machines, and some days she goes and has a cup of coffee and a piece of pie. But she's getting some relief. So I know in Florida they possibly have that possibility to check out.
Well, I forget. I got an email the other night telling me about a wonderful little air machine, you know, for home use. And those things can be a real blessing, too.
Well, we were looking at negative ion machines, and they're still about $300 or so. So that's kind of out of... we can't do that. I want to recommend a movie. Oh, hey, by the way, did you get to hear that voiceover that we did?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did. He did a very nice job.
World War.
Yes.
There's going to be... This was just... that they showed that at Cannes. I think they were money-raising using it. But
wow.
Interesting. Yeah, he turns up with some interesting things from time to time. I'll pitch off. You know what I'm going to send you to play, which is too cool. Josh Groban did the 10 songs, the 10 Josh Groban songs that were rejected on Letterman the other night.
Yeah.
Hysterical.
Okay.
I'll send it. I've got a short form that runs about 6 minutes, and as soon as I got a free hand here. Now, speaking of the complicated geometry of my house, I'm sitting in the chair. The cat is laying in front of the keyboard, and we're happy. And so, okay, now, somebody took me to the movies the other day, and I saw Cowboys and Aliens.
Did you?
It's, if you are a movie buff, it is more fun because it's homage to everything you ever saw. You look at a scene and you go, oh my God, that's Close Encounters. Oh my God, that's the Seven Samurai. Oh my, that's Star Wars. I was calling them homage, and the person that took me to the movies was calling them cliches.
One man's night shirts, fancy's pajamas.
Yeah. It's, If we are a family of movie buffs. My kids and I are all serious movie people, and so this film, if you're into just,
well, see, I saw one on video the other day. My girls forced me to sit down and watch it. I watched a film called Sucker Punch, and having just said Sucker Punch, I can bet David from Maine is going, oh, he saw that. What a very strange film that was. It was by the same guy who directed The Watchmen. And you know what it was? And this is what being a movie buff does for you, Fancy. it makes you see references that aren't necessarily obvious. Now, I mean, I'm not Roger Ebert, okay? But here is a movie about women in a mental institution, and there's a movie within a movie in which there's a fantasy that they are captive dancers in spangly leotards in a 1950s strip joint slash bordello. And then there's a fantasy within that in which at one point they fight cybernetic Kaiser Wilhelm Wehrmacht German soldiers who are zombies.
Oh, wow.
And I get a feeling that Agnes and the girls get kind of pissed with me because, you know, they sit down and watch this, Daddy. This is fun. And so I sit down and watch it, and I start going, oh, that's derivative. And, you know, nobody goes to movies with me anymore.
you can run them for everyone.
But do you know what? I mean, it didn't take long at all for me to realize what that film was. That film... And I say this because I always wanted to do the play and never got to. Because I just wanted to see what the poster looked like. There is a play out there, and I think it came along in the 1960s. And it's called The Persecution and Assassination of Jean-Paul Marat as performed by the inmates of the Asylum of Charenton under the direction of the Marquis de Sade.
I've actually seen that.
It's generally just referred to as Marat Sade. This was Marat Sade for people who didn't know what Marat Sade was.
I saw Marat Sade in Houston in a huge In the Round Theater. And, oh my, yes. Okay. Yeah. Wow.
Only the people are a lot prettier. Beautiful women in this film. Wasn't dirty, wasn't nasty, was occasionally silly. But just like with Cowboys and Aliens, you saw all these homages. Well, I guess you could say that this was an homage to Marat Sade.
Wow. Oh, speaking of dirty and nasty, I've watched again, and I don't know what prompted me to do this, but Caligula, the version with...
The one that John Gielgud sued and then died to get out of? Yes.
Yeah, the one with McDowell. Not Roger McDowell, but Malcolm McDowell.
Malcolm McDowell, yes.
Malcolm McDowell, who's about 19 years old. And he's really young.
Well, yeah, now that my hair has turned completely white, when I put a little mousse in it and I've got a shave, people occasionally accuse me of looking like him.
Well, oh my goodness. You know, I never let for adults only movies really disturb my kids. My kids were knowledgeable and we could talk about anything.
But that was just a bad film.
And, well, in fact, I've written dirty films. I've worked in that business in various occasions. But I'm watching this thing again and going, oh, my. So,
well, do you know that there is a move afoot to remake it?
Oh, this one is just gratuitous pornography. Incredibly.
It was absolutely either the pinnacle or the nadir of Bob Guccione's film career, depending on how you look at it.
It was shot in Bulgaria, and there was a woman director. But it's just, and so I was reading some history, and I was reading about that period, and I was actually trying to Claudius, who came before Caligula, and I generally...
You know, for a sand and sandals kind of thing, I will always go
Caligula's,
for...
Caligula's, he was there for 4 years, so big deal.
Yeah, I will always go for either the BBC's I, Claudius.
Oh, my God, and that's Jacoby?
Derek Jacoby, Brian Blessed, you know, that whole crowd.
And oh, yeah.
That's wonderful. Oh, but then, you know, if you understand that history is being treated like silly putty. The HBO series that ran a few years back at the beginning of the decade, Rome. It was just called Rome. It was darn fun to watch.
Okay, well, I'm going to go away, but I want to repeat. Let's all think about vote.
Oh, I think Fancy's magic jack was misbehaving. Yeah, she was going to repeat. Don't forget, vote defensively. And that's an interesting concept. I remember when the drive defensively campaigns first came out. I was a little kid, late 60s, early 70s. Watch out for the other guy. The life you save may be your own. Drive defensively. Well, now we're down to voting that way. And I get what Fancy is talking about completely. So let's keep this ball rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, listen. You know, you get a lot of emails talking about the third party thing. And, you know, I just want to... People really need to understand that our system can't accommodate it, okay? We have what's called a single-member district plurality voting system, or first, also known as first-past-the-post. It means that you can have four candidates. You have one, you know, A, B, C, D. Someone gets 40, someone gets 30, someone gets 25, someone gets 18, or whatever. But the person who got 40% wins. It's a plurality. They don't have to get majority, just the most votes.
Right.
So what that does is discourage, you know, third party. It fosters two-party systems. Even in England, which is a parliamentary system, they still do first-past-the-post, which is why you only have Labour and Conservative. It just doesn't foster any kind of third-party possibility. So people need to just try to, you know, I don't know why. People just really don't know about our voting system, or they don't really think about it in terms of that, but you really need to look at that too. That's really important. If you want to really get a viable third party, you're going to have to do a PR system, proportional representation, because what that does is it gives each party the percentage of the votes that they garner. That's why you can have multiple parties in parliament, because if the, say, the Democrats got 30% of the vote, they will get 30% of the seats. And if you got 20% of the vote, you'll get 20% of the seats. So everyone will be represented in relation to the vote that they got. But with a majoritarian type systems like we have, it's whoever gets the most votes.
Right, and a system such as ours, Sandra, is aided and abetted by the way that money influences the process.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's in addition too. I mean, you know, you have different, you have sort of, other voting systems where, in Australia, it's sort of a runoff or AV system where the first top two candidates, if you don't get a 50% or more, then you have the top two. So then you run those two off, and whoever wins out of them will get the seat. And what that does, it reduces the whole problem with, say you have a candidate that gets 22,000, your second candidate gets 13,000, and the third one gets 17,000. Well, the 22,000 vote getter is going to win, but if you look at the ballot, the majority of people chose the other two. So the majority was still not represented. You see the problem?
Yeah, it's still, right.
So you have voting systems that solve that by having the top two vote getters, so at least you have some sort of breakup in the plurality, because plurality isn't very fair, as we see, because someone gets the most vote, but if you have like four candidates,
and the classic example of that is this union busting thing that John Micah proposed for the FAA, Sandra.
Yeah, no, that's just absurd and just ridiculous.
You want to count non-voters as no votes?
Right. Well, I mean, all those elected officials wouldn't like that in our system, because none of them would win.
Right. I mean, if none of the above was available on any ballot in the United States, the government would collapse.
Right. So, I mean, no, that's the, and I was looking at that agreement. I mean, they're not really coming out with it, but is Delta getting what they wish?
That's a, as far as, yes.
So, they basically capitulated again, and now Delta can sort of annihilate any unionization. I mean, I don't know if this is true or not, because I couldn't get that information from what I've read.
It stands to reason, Sandra, because Delta is the single largest, I mean, they are the Walmart of anti-union airlines.
No, I know. I just wonder, I mean, because the article didn't say if the poison pill went along with this compromise or not. That's all. And I can't really figure out if it did or not.
And I think those details are probably being kept deliberately murky.
Yeah, well, anyway, I don't even know if that clears it up about the vote, but, you know, because this is...
Well, it does, and, you know, Andy out there in Redwood City pointed out that, you know, Oakland has instituted IRV, instant runoff voting.
Right.
So that, you know, that provides you a little bit of relief.
Yeah.
But it's still not a perfect system by any measure.
Well, no, it's, you know, but people need to sort of... understand that that's the reality before they, you know, freak out about, we need a third party, and how come third parties don't work? Well, what I just sort of laid out goes a long way to explaining why. So, you know, we're stuck in a two-party system unless, you know, some really outrageous changes come about, and I don't really see that happening.
No, it's like this business with this conference on a constitutional convention that Lottie was telling me about. I mean, wouldn't you just love to take your popcorn and go and
Madison?
Sit in the... No, this is in at Harvard, third week of September.
Oh.
And it's a conference on a constitutional convention. Their website is concconcon.org. And... it is half-sponsored by a semi-progressive sort of Harvard professor. And the other half of the sponsorship is the teabaggers. Now, just get your popcorn and go to the balcony.
Oh, dear God. Well...
because that's just going to be fun.
Well, if we're talking about third party, I mean, what you can do is what the Republican Party has done. I mean, you had some sort of, quote, rogue group, the Tea Party, sort of take over that party, and now the Republican Party is the Tea Party. I suppose the Democratic Party could be taken over by people like us, and then it would become the Progressive Party. I mean, I'm not too sure how else you can operate in this system.
Nor am I, and that's why I made that argument, that instead of, and I mean no disrespect to people who want to go and be green and stuff like that and pour their efforts into that, but if you want change right now, you engage with one of the two existing parties and you make the change there.
Well, yeah, I mean, plus the structures are already in place, the institutions are there, and you know, I don't mean to be obnoxious, but you know, people just have to not be lazy and get off their asses, you know, and go to whatever local configuration that might be near you. And as far as the Democratic Party goes, because trust me, the people who are operating in those Democratic parties locally, you know, they're primed to be manipulated if you're loud enough and obnoxious enough. I don't, you know, I think that it's well possible to, you know, introduce whatever you want to these parties because...
Yeah, and,
you know,
and this is a case of, you know, walking the walk and talking the talk. I have run for my county executive committee. Boss man Wayne sits on his county's Democratic Executive Committee.
Yeah, so I just think that those are the sort of options that we should look at first before, you know, going on about third-party stuff. It's like, it ain't going to work, you know, because the system won't accommodate it. People have to understand what we're living under. You know, forget Citizen United. This is just government 101, voting systems 101. You know, this sort of information is readily available for people, and it really helps if you just understand, have some structural understanding about the system you're operating in. And I don't know what I sound like, Bob. I don't mean to sound pedantic. It's just like, yikes already.
No, and I'm not
third-party emails, man.
I'm not talking down to anybody. That's not my intention. But this, you know, it is what it is. Jeanette, who emailed and took exception to me using, and I think the world of her, but took exception to me using the phrase, you know, vanity candidates. And she said, you know, I'm just so sick of the two parties because, well, she said, I don't care whether a Democrat or a Republican wins the White House or any other office because I think it's irrelevant and that we have to think and act way beyond that to turn things around and therefore save the earth for future generations. One analogy is some people have disagreements with the Catholic Church but remain Catholic and try to change it from within. They have a right to do that, but I left the Catholic Church and reject all organized religion. I've now left the two-party system and don't support capitalism.
Well, I mean, it's not that I'm not sympathetic to, you know, that sort of outlook, but you're not going to make a whole lot of headway, at least in the short term. I mean, and unfortunately, shit is, like, unraveling real quick. I have sort of visions of 2007, you know, with the way what happened today with the markets. Do you see that shit?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's you know, there's some... See, what's really scary about this time, there is no... The government is not in a position to bail out shit. This is the thing that people need to realize. Hello? They already did all that. There's nothing left, so... I'm a bit worried about what's going to be happening tomorrow with the jobs report. And Europe is the driving factor with this mess right this second because, you know,
the Euro's a train wreck.
Well, I forget his name, that horrible, European Union banker, the European bank guy. You know, he's not talking right. And it's all, he's saying that, well, Italy is now, it's the periphery is now coming to the core. So Italy is starting to.
Yeah, they're saying that Spain may work its way out, but Italy is essentially toast.
Well, Italy has the largest public debt. I think it's like 1.8 trillion. And, the spreads are becoming unsustainable. Anytime the yield on the auction bonds are above 6, that's when it becomes it's not possible for them to operate that way. So apparently it's like over 6 now for both Italy and Spain. And it's August, so everyone thought that things were going to be slow. But it was also August when Bear Stearns started acting up, see? So
that's right.
If you remember that madness. And, you know, 512. What happened? I thought the debt deal was. Where's the confident fairy? What happened? You know, I don't mean to be.
No. You just got me with confidence fairy.
No, I'm like, what's the deal here? You know, these people are patting themselves on the back. Oh, we did this, that, or another, and it's like, you know what? You're full of shit. And Obama trying to pivot to jobs. It's like, dude, all y'all are effed up because I don't know what the report's going to be tomorrow. But I'm not even going to make any guess. But somehow I don't think it's going to be 300,000 jobs created this past.
No, it's going to be more like 400,000 gone again.
Well, yeah, I know they had all these people. I know they had over 400 apply for the unemployment thing. I just wonder what it's going to be because, you know, the market has lost 10% in 10 days. 10% in 10 days. So that's like over 1,000 points.
Well, you know, demarcation for declaring a correction. I love that word.
It's already corrected in Europe. That's what it's in right now. But yeah.
The New York Times story I saw said that this makes it official because they said 12%.
No, okay. Well, I knew it was just a huge.
So we're in, we're in Correctionville.
Well, no, but the thing is, though, no, they're in Correctionville.
Well, yeah.
Trust me, I don't give. To me, it's starting to bleed over into them people's money. And the other story that's very interesting, is also a bit esoteric, is the New York Bank Mellon. It's a huge, huge bank in New York. They're slapping a fee because clients and institutional organizations are putting too much money into the bank account. So they're trying to force them to go back into equities. So any customer with $50 million or more, they're going to be charged like some huge percentage hit. So they can get that money. So I'm like, These rich people got so much money, it's sloshing around. They don't even know what the fuck to do with it. And, you know, shit look bad. But, you know, for us, the sun will still come up.
On our broke asses.
I'll still be poor, you know, if the shit falls apart. See, that's the thing that is strong and constant.
Yeah, George Carlin, there is a club, and you're not in it.
Yeah, so, but, you know, I have to say, it's just pathetic when you look at the policymakers and the so-called leadership going through all this rigmarole, being told daily that you need to talk about jobs. Even PIMCO, the largest bond hell in the world, the guy came out saying, oh, well, this debt deal is going to make less jobs, it's going to cause less growth and more inequality. Okay?
Because sooner or later they realize that this does touch them.
Right. And
in all of this paper shuffling and these little electronic, I mean, at what point, Sandra, do they shut down electronic trading in these markets?
Well, no, but see, you know, I was thinking today was going to be another one of them. Remember that flash fall, that fake, you know, when it crashed like 900 points in like 2 seconds. Remember that?
Yeah.
Straight up market, you know, you saw. If you have to be dumb as hell not to realize, oh, this shit is all make-believe.
Sandra, do you ever watch those TED Talks at all?
Oh, yeah. I pick and choose because some of them people scare me.
Yeah.
That's what, you know, that video I sent you about talking about video games and how it's going to see. Remember that video?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
That's from TED Talk. So, yeah, some of them ones be scaring me. But, yeah, which one are you talking
about? Well, I just watched one, this guy talking about algorithms in our lives. You know, it sounds like, you know, some sort of 1950s the propaganda film. But, no, the guy is talking about the operation of algorithms in commerce and in the market and stuff. And, no, it is kind of scary because he talks about the effect of algorithms in the market, and they've got names. And he talks about they built a pipeline, literally, that runs from New York to Chicago to cut down by 7 milliseconds on the trading solely for these algorithms to run on.
And when you
watch this, and you know, I don't have the savvy to, but when you watch it and you realize that trading decisions are made by computer programs that operate in the realm of milliseconds,
right.
And, you know, and you're, yeah, because you're a day trader sitting at, you know, you're a dentist day trader sitting there in between fillings going, buy, sell. No, you're screwed.
Yeah, oh, no, it's all front-loaded. And you know, huge, whoever has the know-how, like Goldman Sachs, and they have the proprietary whatever over the algorithms, they're shaving off their little hit, you know, before you even can blink, they made money off of what you think you're going to make money on. So it's all rigged, isn't it? I mean, it's not
right. And why do you reckon Mr. and Mrs. Thurston Howell III took their money out of the market and stuffed it in that savings account at Mellon?
Right, that's what I'm saying. It's like, you know, look at stuff like that. Look at what folks do. Because that story right there, I'm like, oh, okay, shit. That tells me more than I need to know about them motherfuckers are.
But you know what? They may take it out of Mellon, but it ain't going back in the market.
Well, no, I don't know where they think it's going to go.
It's going in the mattress.
Or it's going to go into gold, since that shit's going to be at 2,000 in a minute. Listen, you know, talking about it, it's just like some sort of, you know, so abstract, because I can't even wrap my head around sitting around thinking, oh, my God, I have $100 million. I got to move it. You know, what the fuck? It's just too...
call the moving van.
Yeah, it's too mind-blowing. But the thing is that I think that... The musical chairs are gonna stop again sometime soon. And so, you know, I don't know. I just worry for, you know, us regular folks. You know what I mean?
Well, and ultimately you have to, because eventually, the Lobster for Lunch bunch will take it out of our ass.
Yeah, no, it's,
And the other thing that grabs me, and I don't have the brains to really, or the time, but even when the market is doing this, doing what it's doing now, somebody out there is making money on it.
Well, yeah.
Getting richer on other people getting clipped.
Well, no, and definitely, and also keep this in mind too, is that the PE ratio, the price earning ratio on the stocks, they're still completely out of whack. I mean, just sort of, I know that it's rigged, but if you look at just sort of basic.
But everything is still overpriced.
Basic ideas about stocks, the PE ratio is ridiculous. It's still, like, I don't know, 20%. I mean, it could still fall a lot. That's the thing, if it was a real market. But we know it's not, because you just talked about the algorithms, right?
Right. It's like a lemon meringue pie that's got an eighth of an inch of lemon and, you know, the 6 inches of meringue.
But I tell you what, if this keeps falling like it is, watch for the fake QE. Is it 7 now? I'm telling you, because the only stimulus that's available right now is what the Fed can do. It's so sick. So the Fed will always take care of these rich assholes with their printing presses. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, indeed.
It's horrible, because Obama and his gang, they can't do anything fiscally, because they decided to remove money from the economy with their debt ceiling deal. So, once again...
And this is pure speculation, and shame on us, but is he trying to sort of aid and abet in getting this all to fall down? I mean, does he not know? He's got to know. He's got to know, doesn't he?
I just think that he got, you know, kind of rolled in the sense that he expected his grand bargain to go through. You know, that first one when him and Boehner were talking or sleeping together or whatever they were doing?
Yeah.
And that fell through. So I think he overstepped. He thought that he was going to be able to get the grand deal,
which
included cuts to everything, like, you know, Social Security, everything he, you know, his reform.
This doesn't look good for Lawrence O'Donnell, though.
But it went too far, and I think he lost control of it, Obama. So that's the thing.
Did you happen to catch that segment, Sandra, where Lawrence O'Donnell was patiently explaining to us rubes out here how Obama had offered the grand bargain, knowing that the Republicans wouldn't accept it, so he would negotiate his way down to simply a clean elevation of the debt ceiling, and that's what he wanted all along, and that's what America needs?
That poor deluded soul. Another one?
Yeah, oh, yeah. In fact, I had an email from Andy the other night talking about Lawrence O'Donnell and what a shill he is for the DLC and the status quo anti people. But yeah, that was the argument he made. That, you know, this is all, you know, it was the 11 dimensional chess argument.
It's up to 22 now, Bob. It's 22-dimensional now. I saw that written somewhere, and I was rolling. I thought, good Jesus. But no, did you like my article from the sort of overeducated Nignog? Come on, listen.
I read that, and I just thought, you know, no.
I couldn't resist. I said, no. When I saw it, I said, oh, my God, not the second term. Once again, that overeducated Negro had no concept of politics in America. Don't he know that all second terms are nothing?
Yeah, no, nothing happens.
We're back to government 101 again. The second term is pretty much lame duck, and it's been accelerating in the last few presidencies. I mean, Bush, as soon as he got in, it was over with the second time. You notice that?
Yeah, and see, it's that's another one of my little pet peeves. I want to repeal the term limit on the presidency.
Well, I know. I guess, you know, Roosevelt freaked him out so much. You know, it's true. Because I could have done with some more Truman.
Yeah, and you know, they did that. They did that. You know, Eisenhower was never going to be a three-termer. It's almost impossible to be a three-termer.
Yeah, but just the threat of it—is that what you're saying?
Yeah, but it's so funny, because if the possibility of running for a third term exists, that whole dynamic where you're a lame duck in your second term, by definition, has to go away.
Well, yeah. You would have a different dynamic. But so to hear people, and especially deluded black people, talking about, oh, well, next time, it's like, oh, no, you know. It's just pathetic, that's all. And I just thought that whole article was really kind of, not only was it self-serving, but it was just like,
well, but did you hear Obama's own words from Chicago last night?
What, telling people what? how to frame his badass.
He said, when I said change we can believe in, I didn't say change we can believe in tomorrow.
Oh no! See, it's no. See, that's wow. I don't even know what to say about that. No, I missed that. That's funny. That's what he said.
Oh yeah. I had the sound up and everything. I wasn't just reading lips.
Listen, he needs to be real scared of Romney, though. I'm telling you. It really is going to depend on who the freaks nominate. Because if it's Willard, I mean, people can look at that and think, oh,
well, and you got to figure if a Rick Perry comes in, then
Perry is another one.
Then but Perry and Bachman, I think, will cancel each other out.
No, but I still can see people looking at just by aesthetics, just how these people appear, and think Romney is reasonable.
Well, he's got that little bit of gray at the temples,
right.
And
especially in the face of 12% unemployment or whatever the hell we might be 18 months from now. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I don't see 8% unemployment or 6%.
No. I mean, that would be an economic expansion that would almost be too hot to handle, wouldn't it?
Well, I mean, it's sort of, when you look at the numbers that are coming in, the sort of, oh my God, we only grew at a 0.04% or something real anemic, and then it was revised down, and so this whole year has been sort of, as soon as the stimulus money ran out, everything sort of came to a stop.
And right, and yet this morning I'm watching Morning Joe, and that idiot, that just unmitigated idiot, Scarborough, the unindicted murderer, is talking to Chuck Todd, and he's talking goatee, and he said, "Well, Chuck, is all the stimulus money already gone?" And it's too early for gin. And Chuck Todd says, "Well, Joe, you have to remember, of that $900 billion of stimulus you're talking about there, $400 billion of that was tax cuts. It wasn't really money. It wasn't really stimulus. And, yeah, the money's all gone now, and we repaved a bunch of roads because that's what we could do right then and there. Not like America didn't need roads repaved."
Yeah. No, it's sort of, I shudder to think what we're looking at for just this fall coming up, I mean, mind you, maybe the markets will recover some tomorrow. I mean, who knows? Or the Plunge Protection Group will step in. That'll be the Fed,
But meanwhile, the first trickles are coming out about this Super Congress, and none of this is reassuring.
Oh, listen, this is I'm still
because Boner and Chinless Mitch have said that they're going to just appoint fire breathing reactionary terrorists.
Right.
And so, did you catch the response from Nancy Pelosi?
What'd she say?
She said, "Well, maybe me and Harry just need to not appoint anybody."
How about that? That sounds good.
Yeah.
No, I mean, to me,
I mean, if you've got the thing structured where you've got to have X number of people to have a quorum, and they got six and we got none, then the damn thing doesn't happen.
Don't do it. And I think that because it's so dubious, the whole Super Congress, if they already have promised no revenue, what else can the Democrats do unless they just want the cuts to happen? And these automatic triggers?
That's the other problem is if that scenario plays out, don't the automatic triggers just happen?
Right, but as far as I can tell with the Congress, they can renege on any spending cuts they put out there. Nothing's etched in stone. We're supposed to believe this shit's going to go down over 10 years? Really? Do you believe that?
A lot can happen.
Right, so I don't know about any of it, but I do know that If turtleneck and that orange thing is already saying no, they're just going to put reactionaries on there, then...
Well, I mean, can't you just see it? Let's say, Boner hates Cantor now, so Cantor ain't getting on. But let's say it's John Kyle.
or soon, that horrible, yeah. How many of them to choose?
Yeah, I mean, they got, I mean, you know, he wouldn't put Bachman on, but you could, I mean, you could put a Paul Brown on, you know, that crazy bastard that's worried about the country club memberships.
Or they could put Ryan.
There. Ryan is an almost automatic.
They can put that fool on there, and on the Senate side, they can put that freak that Obama appointed his lawyer as a federal attorney. Did you hear about this?
No, say what?
Okay, I think his name is Lee. He's that really...
Oh, that crazy-ass Mike Lee from Utah, the teabagger?
Right, so Obama just appointed his legal advisor as the federal attorney for Utah.
Oh, shoot. Me.
That happened today, and I was just...
God.
What the... So, anyway...
But now, that guy doesn't really have the seniority, but, I mean, we got... You know, what a little plum it would be to... Well, but John McCain, John McCain's already called them teabagger hobbits, so McCain's out. But, yeah, John Kyle, is that crazy-ass Cornyn from Texas still around?
Right.
Yeah, no. He might be handy. No, guess who serves on the banking committee? And Richard Shelby.
Right. And there's always Jeff Sessions.
No, I expect Obama to nominate him to the Supreme Court.
Well, exactly. It is like that. See, that's why, you know, as far as, oh, we must vote for Obama, it's like, well, why at this point? I don't know. See, I'm already envisioning Obama wins narrowly, and then we have a Republican Senate and a Republican House. So the only buffer between entitlement reform is none. You see what I'm saying?
Well, but you know, I used to think it was absolutely almost statistically impossible for Obama to lose simply because he's done such a good job of doing what the Republicans want in the first place. You know, we get a sop here and there. Like I said, it was not lost on me that the announcement came out about birth control access at the same time that we were just beginning to settle down from the capitulation, surrender, whatever you want to call it, over the debt ceiling. Because it always happens that way. So today, you know, I see this story, and yeah, it's a serious story for people who live where I live, Sandra. A bunch of federal agencies have all signed off on an environmental justice memorandum of understanding, and it's pretty huge. You know, about not just completely rolling over the poor and poverty communities.
Oh, okay.
And taking that kind of stuff into account. Because, you know that, the student, taking the student loans out of the profit sector, a few not so odious elements of the Affordable Care Act, you know, don't ask, don't tell, things like that. You know, those are sops. Well, they're social issue sops that people get, and you know, I don't want to get anybody pissed at me, but those are things that people get really, really passionate about. And overlook the boring economic stuff. It's like baseball. It's like learning to bunt. Nobody wants to learn to bunt.
Well, which makes Obama more in the vein of the Rockefeller wing of the Republican.
Yes.
Yeah, because he was that whole ring was well socially liberal. So I mean, that's what I'm thinking. Obama is more of a Rockefeller Republican.
Sure.
But no, the optics look good on symbolic stuff like that, no doubt.
But you can't just sit there and ignore. And this is the thing that gets people who are pissed with Obama in horrible, nasty little Twitter flame fests with people who will defend him at all costs. And I'm somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, but these are the things that are, like, damaging the sort of progressive/liberal movement beyond repair, though, you see?
Yeah, and you walk away and, you know, I'm going to be a green. But, you know, go to vote on a Tuesday, there ain't going to be, and understand, I'm saying this as a West Virginian, okay, Sandra? I'm not trying to insult anybody who lives in civilization. But, you know, I can walk away from the Democratic Party. I can go be an independent. If I'm an independent, I can vote in either primary.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just counterintuitive, but never mind. But in doing that, you know, I can go be green, I can join the mountain party, you know, I can do whatever, but I'm not going to have any county commission candidates. I'm not going to have any candidates for House of Delegates. I'm not going to have any candidates for the state Senate. I'm not going to have a candidate for county surveyor or library board or executive committee. I'm going to have the luxury of having me some guy who's run or woman who's running for president that I can say, well, I kept my conscience clean.
Mm.
Well, you know, can we have that little come to Jesus moment and realize that politics is I'm ashamed of myself for saying this. Politics is no place for a conscience. It's an almost sociopathic or psychopathic exercise.
Well, yeah, which explains the sort of schizophrenic response that Obama is getting from people. You know, they're like, well, you said you were going to be this, and you're not, and so I'm not going to play anymore. But like you said, it's politics, and it's ugly.
And it's supposed to be the art of the possible, and
blah blah blah,
and we're going to learn to compromise, and you know it's a good compromise if nobody's happy, and
ugh.
Right, all of that stuff that just makes me vomit now.
Yeah.
Now I got a little tiny well protected shielded corner of my heart that still has like 2 micrograms of idealism in it, and I really do. I guard it jealously, Sandra. Because I want to be, if there ever is a day in America where we can, you know, we can rally behind somebody and go forward, I want to be there for that. And I want those 2 micrograms of idealism to be a part of that.
Yeah, but there's nothing idealistic about wanting to maintain the social safety net, though. See, that's the thing.
No, that's just business.
My head in.
Yeah.
You know, the sort of trying to be some sort of equivalency on that is just craziness. That's why I'm so disturbed by the times we're living in now, because it's like, hang on, you know, these are sort of the social contract that we agreed to in exchange for maintaining this horrific capitalist system. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there are facts, and there is right and wrong, and having the safety net is right. It's not up for debate. And that's why I resent Obama.
There's not so two sides to that discussion. I've never ran it or anything, because I don't like to run NPR stuff. They get cranky and they sue.
Shut up. I didn't know that.
Well, no, I mean, they don't like it. But I've got a link here. NPR misrepresents ex-gay. Just sit down. NPR misrepresents ex-gay therapy as controversial and still up for debate. And I'm sick of that crap, Sandra. I am sick of that crap. There is not a competing, compelling argument for starving granny to death, and there is not a competing, compelling academic argument that you can set up a homo-nomo school and make somebody stop being gay. And yet, the whole media universe in this country is predicated on that false premise. That every story, that, you know, that maybe there is a good argument for eliminating Medicare. That maybe there's a good argument for getting rid of Social Security.
Well, no. I mean, if there's a good argument for that, then you need to reevaluate what a society is.
Yes. I mean, and it's the same thing as that hideous, hateful, revolting, disgusting Pam Geller. And this is an example of how far that false premise ethos has permeated into the for-profit media. You know, when Pam Geller goes out there and says, well, you know, Breivik had some good ideas. Because the youth camp had more Middle Eastern or mixed races than pure Norwegian.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's very dicey. And
Pat Buchanan, you know, and Pat Buchanan says, well, you know, he did the wrong stuff, but he had the right idea.
And no, but if this was a Muslim site, they would have rounded up that bitch by now.
You're damn right. And if it hadn't, I mean, look, you know, like I said, I tuned into Morning Joe this morning, and son of a bitch, there's that Mark Helprin back on the TV. The guy who on national television said the President of the United States is a dick.
Right. You know, well, we got the tar baby guy, you know. That guy trying to apologize didn't sound like an apology.
No, well, I'm sure President Obama meant that I did. You know, that's just out of blazing. I'm sorry about the up yours, but well, I do hope you'll have the common decency not to speak to me on the street.
Well, but I have to say that one thing that I saw that I was just dying. I thought, are you kidding me? That Pat, old crusty old Pat Buchanan said boy to the wrong Negro. He said boy on Al Sharpton's show.
And Al got out. Yeah, and I went back and Al got sideways.
That shit was funny, wasn't it?
Yeah, because Al just, you know, straight up.
Oh, he's like, hello?
I don't know if he expected, I don't know if Pat expected Al, you know, well, you know, boy, you're on the network, you got a network news show now, so you have to put up with me.
Yeah, no, I was like, oh, snap, and sure enough, he got put in his place properly. It was funny. Oh, old Pat Buchanan, he needs to retire. That guy he's way, way past it. Jesus.
Well, but you know, but him, Halperin, you know, they're still writing the checks.
I know, it's disgusting, but you know, Pat Buchanan just cannot help himself. You know, it's just like, I was like, oh my God.
No, he really can't. He can't help himself. He's just an old Klansman, and the only cure for that is death.
It is so apparent. I mean, he's sitting across, right near, you know, a black man, and you know, he just can't help it. Anyway, that was fairly enjoyable.
Oh, and by the way, you know the NFLPA signed their collective bargaining agreement today, right?
Yeah, I saw that. I didn't get a chance. I mean, so what does that mean? It's on and cracking, or what?
Oh yeah, no, we're gonna have some ball.
I heard that, did you see that Bubba Smith died?
Yeah, that bum. And look, 66 years old.
66, man? That's what I was going to say. I'm like, oh, my God.
And you know, that's proof of the fact, of those statistics that say that NFL players die sooner.
Yeah, their lives are shortened. Yeah, I was sort of taken aback by that. I'm like, oh, no. But,
But it is interesting that the new collective bargaining agreement includes blood testing for human growth hormone.
Oh, I didn't realize they. Oh, really? They got that in there, huh?
Yeah.
Hmm.
And it's the first league to do so with the consent of their players' union.
Huh.
And they will start testing the first week of the regular season.
That's interesting.
Oh, but our little popcorn moment. Did you? Two of your favorite human beings. You know where I'm going, right? Did you see the Tebow controversy?
No, see, I haven't had time. What? Please tell me.
Okay, so Merrill Hodge, you know, played running back for the Steelers. He's an analyst with ESPN.
Okay.
Said, I've seen the film of Tebow. He's just awful. He's terrible. He has no business in the NFL. He's bad. He's past bad. I mean, just dropped a rock on little Timmy Jebo.
No way.
So who comes running to his defense, Sandra? Strap in. LeBron.
Whoa, what did that idiot have to say?
Yeah,
what?
Shut the F up, mama, LeBron James.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, thanks, Merrill Hodge, for helping out. I'm sure Tebow will be a great NFL star because he's a player and he's a winner.
That was his comment?
Yeah, that was his tweet. And then Tebow chimes back in and goes, at Merrill Hodge, appreciate that.
Oh, no. Forget. Oh, see, I guess LeBron, he's still sore because he, you know, lost that.
I don't know. Maybe he wants to sign him to the Heat, too. You know, anything for a ring.
Oh, my God. That's so damn funny.
And Timmy's got him a book out.
Oh, no.
And the title, it's a headshot of him, and the title of the book is in a little bit of eye black under one eye. Isn't that clever?
Oh, God. Well, he should be trying to learn how to play football, apparently.
I really would. I would like for some crazy-ass owner to trade for him and make him his starter. I want that.
So you can watch it every Sunday?
I will take what little money we've got, and I will get DirecTV and the NFL package just to watch that.
Where did that horrible Josh Daniels end up? Is he
anywhere? Oh, God, I don't know. But you're right. Yeah, that horrible. Yeah.
Oh, no. See, there was something else.
Yeah, where's Jamarcus Russell?
Huh?
Jamarcus Russell. Remember him from a couple of years?
Yeah.
Years ago? Is he still with the Raiders?
Oh, no. He got done from doing cough syrup. Remember that?
Oh, shh.
Yeah.
God.
But no, the other one I wanted to mention was the rubbernecking train wreck that is Tiger Woods. It's like he's coming back again. And I'm like, please, sweetie, take a longer break, you know?
But you know what? I'm convinced that David in Tennessee was spot on. He said, you know, Tiger was juicing.
Oh, yeah, no, you don't have no...
And all of this breakdown shit that happens is what happens when you quit juicing.
Right, what about, remember that doctor in Canada? Well, that was weird. You know, where there's smoke. Where there's smoke, Bob. And that poor...
Can't be reached by no congressional subpoena, though, right?
No, that's right. But that poor man, Tiger, you know, I have to say I have some sympathy because he fired that idiot, Caddy, and that bitch couldn't keep his mouth shut. I'm like, wow, how ungrateful. That's my support of Tiger. It's like, you need to shut the hell up. He paid you $400,000 for years and years, and all you can do is complain? Shit. So, you know, when they fall, they really leave the boat, don't they?
Oh, yeah, and, you know, that caddy's sitting there with that little pencil and that little pad
he's
of paper.
Disgusting.
He ain't just keeping score and counting strokes. He's counting dirty words.
Right now.
And then on the 14th at Augusta was the day that he told the little girl to go F herself and get out of his line of sight. Yeah.
With his tell-all book. I know, no, it's despicable. He really should stop. But now Tiger has some caddy from his college days or high school.
Yeah, I read something about that.
And I guess he's, you know, and so, of course, people are going to tune in, but, I mean, apparently his body is seriously breaking down. I mean, it's sad because he's gone from, oh, yeah, he's really going to get the 18 majors, to, will he ever get another major?
and it's, yeah, it is. It's sad.
And, I mean, you know, because I'm kind of...
Because you know what? Jack did his... And I'm pretty sure that the only performance enhancing substances he was two fingers of good scotch and a beer back.
Exactly. No. It's a whole different world. And if that was the case with Woods, well, he certainly is paying now because he seems to have an injury every other swing, if I may say.
Pretty soon, I'm afraid an arm's just going to fly off.
Anyway,
you know,
I don't know.
Zombie Tiger.
I have to say, I have some sympathy. You know, I'm like, yikes.
And the PGA out there looking around, don't we have another one out there playing golf yet?
Well, they have. They desperate because, who knows? You know, I guess it's the sort of, I'm going to come back and show them. Maybe.
But the thing is, he's still a draw. If he enters the tournament, people will show up.
Well, just to see the train wreck. He has that value, too.
You know, I mean, but it's the same, you know, to a micro degree, they did the same thing with John Daly. You know, it got to where you showed up to see John Daly play because every now and then when he was sober, you know, he would hit the ball 375, 400 yards.
Oh, no, he definitely had some amazing skills. I'll give it to that fool. But his life was a train wreck, and that's why people tuned in, which reminds me, that video you made me watch, I don't know if we ever discussed it, that NASCAR woman... That one, that traumatized me for so long.
Didn't that just drive you? Well, I'm still, I can't watch NASCAR anymore without thinking of her because I know that she's out there watching Dale Jr.
No, but then a man came into the screen and that really sent me. I was like, ah.
Well, with that in mind, I got something for you, Sandra.
Oh, no.
This is a week or so ago. I take you now to the Nashville Motor Speedway. You know, here in America, we got to pray in front of every sporting event, right?
Yeah.
I offer you the invocation of the Lord God Almighty by Pastor Joe Nelms during the pre-race invocation Saturday night at Nashville Super Speedway. Now you're going to hear this and you go, no, this guy is a real live preacher. Follower of Jesus, believes in the virgin birth, died on the cross, raised after 3 days, all that stuff. I want you to hear how he prayed before the NASCAR race in Nash Vegas, Tennessee. You strapped in?
Yeah.
All right.
Smoking hot wife tonight, Lisa. My two children, Eli and Emma.
Wait a minute, we missed a little bit.
Children, Eli and Emma.
Okay, back to the beginning. Here we go.
Lord, I want to thank you for my smoking hot wife tonight, Lisa. My two children, Eli and Emma, or as we like to call them, the Little E's. Lord, I pray you bless the drivers and use them tonight. May they put on a performance worthy of this great track. In Jesus' name, boogity, 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 amen.
You know, I didn't know you were supposed to add that boogity, boogity, boogity part.
Wow. You know, this is when I think it's really it's like living in Yugoslavia up in here. Now I'm gone. That's way up north. I don't even know what.
In Jesus' name, boogity, boogity, boogity. You know, he's just channeling a little Ricky Bobby.
I like the calling of the family.
Yeah, all that was, it's just precious.
That was great.
But that really was the prayer. Boogity, boogity, boogity. If I don't add boogity, boogity, boogity to prayer meeting Wednesdays, there's something wrong with me. Yeah.
Got to. Because, you know, the amen and amen already has me. So throw that in there.
Oh, that's... You mean I had you at amen?
Yeah. No, that is so funny, that. You know, that whole setup is just... amazing. But if you throw that in there, wow. You're probably going to send some people over the edge. Anyway, Bob, listen, have a good evening.
You take care, Sandra. Bye now.
All right, bye.
Boogity, boogity, boogity. Rolling onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how's it going?
Pretty good. What's up, Chris?
It's Chris from the 9-mile here. Well, one, I'm being the baby. That's neither here nor there. But we've been voting first past the post in Canada here for quite a while, and it doesn't necessarily mean... Here, have a bottle. There you go. And it doesn't necessarily mean it's all or nothing. I mean, yes, it's first past the post, but pluralities are pluralities. They represent less than 50% of the population, which means you can have three or four of them, as the NDP proved in Canada recently. Prima facie evidence is that you can win with 25 to 30% of the vote. And the last time I checked, that's actually lower than what they estimate that the progressive population is out in the state. So that if you could get somebody who's an actual progressive to actually do door-to-door stuff and say, hey, I'm a progressive, I'm not an a-hole, vote for me, you should be able to get a plurality just like the teabaggers did to take the election. I don't think you can take back the Democratic apparatus.
You know, it's interesting you would say that, Chris, because at one point in time we were saying that the Republican Party was dead. And then along came the teabaggers, and the Republican Party is re-energized, revamped, and, you know, out for blood.
Yes, but there's a very quintessential difference. There isn't actually an infinite amount of rich people money out there to take advantage of all of us and rape us all simultaneously. They actually do have to pick their fight. There is a reason. There's only one Fox News. There's not eight or nine Robert Murdochs. There's one Robert Murdoch because he can afford to buy one radio station, one TV network, one of these things. That's why, you know, MSNBC is not Fox. That's why CNN, MSNBC, ABC, ABC, DEF, and all the others, they're not all Fox Lite. You know, we're looking at actual people who do passing notions in the direction of journalism on TV, even now, even with all that's gone on.
Awful hard to find, though. But there is a difference between the Canadian system and the U.S. system, and that is this. You're dealing with a parliament. We're dealing with a bicameral legislature that is and a constitutional structure that is wildly different from your own.
Yes, but how the guy in charge of the party or in charge of the governorship or the presidency gets selected is really rather immaterial to you and me, Bob. It's about the legislature. If you've got the legislature, you've got everything.
Well, I agree, but working backwards for a minute, I agree that there could be change, but like Sandra says, it's going to happen at a rather glacial pace. Simply because getting these third party movements routinely, with very little exception, they like to run what I call vanity candidates. They like to run people for Senate. They like to run people for major national office. They like to run people for president, because it to one degree or another, it increases their visibility. For instance, the Mountain Party here in West Virginia always has to run somebody for governor, because that's how they maintain their position as a real legitimate political party. But this thing's been in existence for a number. But we don't run people. We don't run. We seldom run people for House of Delegates. I identify with them. I like them. But they seldom run people for House of Delegates. God knows they don't run people for City Council. They don't run people for County Commission. They don't. And the only way that you're going to build that ability to create the plurality is by having local identification. It is working in places here, as Andy has noted out in California. It works there because they instituted instant runoff voting.
Instant runoff voting is usually administered by computers, and you know how well they work. We have instant runoff voting in our municipalities here. Some of them have implemented it, some of them have not. But I still don't trust the counting machines. They're still doing it automatically. They don't go in. Even Election Canada does not go in and recount the votes. They hold on to them, but they don't do a recount unless it's demanded. And by and large, you have to trust the machine. And if the machine is wrong, Elections Canada, unless it is part of a criminal investigation that's incited by one of the parties, they won't investigate.
Well, Andy wrote in a couple of minutes ago, Chris. He said, in Europe, the proportional voting system is prevalent. Germany, for sure. So Greens and Communists can get a seat at the table. He says it would be so nice to live in a country where the far-left third party sits in a national parliament with some representation. The Czech Republic now has a right-wing government coalition with civic Democrats. Top 09, the public affairs parties running the country from the far right, pretty fascist in policies and nature. The other day, a report came out on the Czech radio that if elections were held today, the Social Democrats, Greens, and Communists would get a majority of the vote and all would be represented in the government. It takes at least 5% of the national vote to get a seat in Parliament. Today, the Greens and Communists aren't represented. Next election, they should be, because the working people have figured out the right-wingers are sticking it to them. State pension, age hikes, health care, privatization, the austerity bug are the right-wing policies of the day. He says, as you remember, recently in a national referendum, proportional voting did not pass in Great Britain. They're sticking with the failed first-past-the-post system, which benefits the major parties, particularly the right-wingers. How nice it would be to have a far-left party to gum up the corporate agenda in the House. But the thing is, you know, there's a far-right party. They call themselves teabaggers here. But they, you know, and they are certainly gumming up the works. But look how they managed to do this. They didn't because the vast majority of them came from the Libertarian Third Party, which is one of the older third parties in the United States, along with the Socialists.
They're AstroTurf. They were formed by moneyed elites. They did not go out and do the Democrats and the Republicans and the teabaggers. They did not form four teabag parties. They formed one. Again, what Sandra was saying before about them going after Italy, and then going after Spain. They don't have the capital to actually rape all the countries simultaneously. They have to get them primed. They have to set up the economic apparatus first before they can go after one. And then they go after another, and then they go after another. And if one of them actually manages to get out from under it, they go back to that one, yes. But after they're done with the one they're on. The Democratic Party, its apparatus, is very cheap to control. Because you've got such a massively rich society, and you've got such a government that goes over top of the whole society, your country is very rich, very prosperous, lots of people, which makes it very rich and profitable. You have a problem of it's very cheap to control you. The corporations love that. They don't want a whole bunch of little countries. They don't want every state going its own way. They don't want a weak union. They want a very strong union. They want a very powerful president, so they only have to buy one president. They don't want to have to buy two or three. They're always about cost savings. Now, I'm sure they could buy two or three, but they really don't want to. to, and it, I don't know, it hurt their soul, whatever is left of it, to do it. But we don't have a single government, a religion, a society, an ethical point of view that anticipates the existence and acknowledges the existence of sociopaths, psychopaths, amoral personalities, abusive personalities. I'd just be happy if one recognized abusive relationships, either with people or with inanimate objects, like the earth or whatever. But we don't have one that's based on that. And
you know, I ran across. I got to see if I can find this. I ran across a quote. I read all manner of geeky stuff, unrelated to reality, just as an effort to keep myself sane enough to get behind the mic every night. So I was rereading Dune, and never having done it, or if I did it, I don't remember doing it. I went and started reading Dune Messiah. Okay. Just because I've got this little idea that there's something. I think if we wanted to play it out, Dune could be the left's answer to Atlas Shrugged. But there
I haven't
was.
I haven't read it in depth yet. I was just thinking something between Adam Curtis's Century of Self, Orwell's scenario, the Hadley scenario, the Brave New World. And all these things are playing out against us, and we've got no leverage back.
Right, but we need something responsive because, as sick and twisted as it is, Atlas Shrugged is a positive for the right wing. They view it positively, and we need some piece of writing that defines a paradigm for us that is equally positive. Or some way of going forward and understanding an otherwise incomprehensible world. And for me, it's occurred to me that, Dune, Frank Herbert's Dune may represent some of that. You know, fear, what is the one thing that the teabaggers and the Republicans and the authoritarian bastards trade in, Chris? They trade in fear.
Fear is the mind breaker.
And we know from Dune that fear is the mind killer. Fear is the little death. I will face my fear, and I will let my fear wash over me, and when it is gone, I will remain. So I was reading in Dune Messiah last night, and I actually tweeted this. Between depriving a man of 1 hour from his life and depriving him of his life, there exists only a difference of degree. You have done violence to him, consumed his energy. And that just crawled all over me, Chris, because of the absolute reality. It spoke to me because the whole quote begins with an understanding of Frank Herbert says in one of the little headers to the chapter that governments are formed to help us not do the violence to each other that we would otherwise rather like to do.
There's truth in that.
There's a ton
honestly,
of truth in it.
I don't have the answers to any of this. The whole democracy doesn't work if you have idiots, if you have sociopaths, if you have psychopaths, if you have a society without these people. It's all idealistic. Yeah, democracy may, in fact, work if you have everybody working with non-ill intent. As you're setting, I'm way back on my podcast. I just got back from vacation. It was about 2 weeks ago.
Oh, congratulations. Glad you got one.
Yeah. Working holiday. But the societies that perpetrate democracy, they don't accommodate the fact that there are people who exist, that everybody knows they exist, that science has proven exist, that should not vote, that they can never vote, they can never cast their credibility in a direction that would leave anyone else better, even themselves, that actually asking them to participate would harm them and everybody else, that they cannot do anything in a direction of positive, regardless of education, regardless of threats of violence, threats of punishment, threats of just, your mother will feel bad about you. It doesn't matter. That there are people out there that should not have the vote. Now, some states, some nations, some provinces have things about senile. Do not get the vote. People who admitted to a mental institution. Your nation seems to think that, you know, everybody that's locked up shouldn't be enfranchised, so that, you know, if...
And, yeah, and the funniest thing about that, Chris, is that, for instance, my state, West Virginia, if you're convicted of a felony, you automatically lose your right to vote. You also lose your right to keep and arm bears. I mean, bear arms.
I just got a book by that name. It's really good.
However, upon the law says that upon completion of your term of confinement or punishment, your right to bear arms returns to you automatically, like a boomerang that's just been out there for a while. You have to, however, you have to jump through hoops to get back your right to vote.
Yep. Well, I'm just thinking, if I was an unscrupulous politician and there's a whole bunch of people voting against me, I would find something that that group does, something about that group, or something that's unique to that group that isn't unique to any group that votes for me, and extremely criminalize it, so that they'd be, you know, if it ever comes up and a helpful police officer is there to arrest them and charge them and, you know, send them to jail, well, I wouldn't have to worry about anybody ever voting against me. Oh, better yet, make protest illegal so that if anybody really objects, none of these people will ever be voting against me. I don't have to worry about protesters because I know...
Well, you know, they're working on that down in that little town in Arkansas where they criminalized forming a new group that discusses anything.
Anything?
Anything.
Nice.
The ladies' laundry... The ladies' Thursday laundry club.
Tupperware club? Nice.
Forget it. If it's new, you have to have a permit from the county commission to do it, and if you don't, you're violating the law. No kidding. You know, it won't withstand constitutional scrutiny, but, you know, these things aren't about what will or will not withstand constitutional scrutiny, Chris. They are about the fundamental urges of fundamentalist people.
You stopped me cold with that one. Anything.
Wow. Anything.
Get the hell out of that country, Bob. Seriously, you're dying of toxic poison. Your kids are dying of toxic poisoning. All the people you seem to like and love and hold dear are dying of toxic poisoning, running around in a fascist empire. And if I recall correctly, the number one reason for Jews not fleeing Germany in before Second World War and before the Germans decided to go all, well, Nazi on them, was they had a piano and they couldn't get out of the country. So don't let the piano stop.
Well, and my piano is my home. I mean, I guess I could go anywhere in the world and be homeless.
Honestly, what's better, being homeless and doing, I don't know, a 2-cent radio talk show from an internet cafe, or, you know, dying a slow, painful death in agony and watching your kids deteriorate around you? I mean, we've really got to add this up. We're not living in a nice place. They're going to open up mountaintop removal or coal mining or something around here. We've got a few people who have noticed this, but it seems everybody else is on the bandwagon. There is no protest movement to speak of coordinating. Or
well, you know what? We need to gather together some people of goodwill in your community, Chris. And we need my flabby old ass out there lighting a fire under them, just to come for a visit, even.
Here's an idea. Have you thought of taking up a roaming radio talk show where you're going to these sites of mountaintop removal all over the world and becoming an international icon and such? I mean,
well, if you do it all over the world, there's places in the world where they solve the problem by killing your ass. I've been looking at trying to link up with some groups in India, just because it's an Indian consortium that's blowing up the mountain nearest me.
Yeah, they're fairly violent over in India. They offered me a co-op position over there.
Yeah, consider what happens to people who try to organize the coal mines in Colombia, with whom, by the way, we got the happy news, Chris, that by the end of September, our free trade agreement with Colombia will be done. Well, if you happen to be a union activist in Colombia, you get a coupon good for two free bullets behind the ear.
Yeah, they keep finding all these union activists and union organizers all over the world turning up remarkably dead, and nobody thinks this is a problem. Let's trade with them. They're our kind of people.
Exactly. And remember, it was Obama's attorney general who defended Chiquita Banana for hiring death squads that killed union activists. I got to get out of here, Chris. I'm plumb out of time, brother.
Me too. I got a baby.
I hear the baby and enjoy it. They're a lot more fun at that age than they are when they're 16 and want the keys.
I'll take your word for that.
See you, Chris.
Cheers.
Bye now.
Bye.
And for the other four blinking lights, I apologize. We will get at it again tomorrow for Friday on the front porch. Is that okay? It's time to get out of here. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Listen, seriously, it is cheap to become a member of Coal River Mountain Watch. Real cheap. Become a member. That way you can stick your hand up and say, I am part. I'm not sitting down. I am part of the struggle to create real, meaningful human rights change in Appalachia. CRMW.net has everything you need to know. Thanks, everybody, who makes everything go. And thank you for your kind contributions. We covered tonight.